It's time to go back in time.
Sound off, 468, on the arena's Facebook page. And by the way, these arena names are out of control. Out of control. I did a quick search before on the one in New Orleans because I was there for Mania or Raw the night after, whatever, a few years ago. And I remember thinking, what a stupid name this arena has. It's the Smoothie King Center in New Orleans, okay? So I looked that up, but then while I'm searching before, I'm like, let me search around and see some of the other names. That's not even the worst one. They have the Talking Stick Resort Arena in Phoenix. Yes, the Talking Stick Resort Arena. That is a real name. PPG Paints Arena isn't much better, but at least it's not named after a talking stick.
It's business time, baby.
The Solid Monster sounds off.
My client, Brock Lesnar, conquered the streak.
This doesn't make any sense.
Your title belt is made of leather. You're not a real vegan.
He's fat. You haven't been beat up properly. Woo!
Well, it was made official this week that the Elimination Chamber pay-per-view is coming back next year. No date announced yet. I had assumed it would be a SmackDown show since the Raw pay-per-view comes after TLC, and it sounds like it will indeed be a SmackDown brand show, which means my idea to have The Undertaker win the championship from AJ at the Royal Rumble and then have the Chamber come down to Cena and Styles with Cena winning and challenging Undertaker for the title of WrestleMania is still alive. Anyway, I mentioned this because of where the event is being held. After my rant on dumb arena names last month. Remember I mentioned the Talking Stick Arena that you heard there? Well, guess where the Chamber is headed? That's right. The Talking Stick. Which I'm sure is a fine facility, but that name is something else. I guess it's tied in with an Indian reservation there. I think that's the whole story behind it. Speaking of Cena, he is hosting Saturday Night Live next weekend. That's a big deal. I've been wondering why he's never hosted before. It seems like he'd be a natural at it. So he is going to be hosting on the 10th. So that'll be something to watch for. This is episode 472, before I forget, of the Solid Monster Sounds Off here for Sunday, December 4, 2016. I am the Solid Monster. Audible is still offering listeners of the Sound Off a free trial of their service for 30 days. And you can cash in to get one free audiobook that you get to keep no matter what. Just use our link, audibletrial.com/solidmonster here as we wind down 2016. The year's almost over, so take advantage of it. audibletrial.com/solidmonster. You can cash in and get The Death of WCW. You can get Bob Holly's book, Daniel Bryan's book, Brock Lesnar's book, Chris Jericho's book. Pick one, and whether you stick with the trial or not, you get to keep it on us. So definitely take advantage of that. Also, we've got a brand new shirt up in our store on ProWrestlingTees.com. Just go over to ProWrestlingTees.com/SolidMonsterSoundsOff. It is the, well, anybody who listens to the show every week, you hear the old Daniel Bryan clip from the interview that I did with him WrestleMania weekend in Miami several years ago. Actually, just a couple of days before he got kicked in the face and pinned in 18 seconds by Sheamus, where he mentions getting a lot of grief from people on Twitter, because at the time he was still a vegan. I don't know if he still is or not. I don't think he is, but he was getting a lot of grief because he was the world heavyweight champion, and they were saying, you know, your title belt is made of leather. You're not a real vegan. So people were wondering, oh, where's that quote from? That's where it's from. It's from the interview that myself, Noah, and Brian did with him in Miami. And so I said, why not make it a shirt? And I want to give a shout out to Sean Atkins for helping out with that, for his graphical skills. And I want to, by the way, also say thank you to everybody who reached out or recommended people on new designs for me to speak with. I heard from a lot of talented people. I'm sure I'm going to be hitting them up for some help and new designs going forward in the future. So if you've emailed me and I haven't gotten back to you or whatever, just hang in there. So I want to say thank you for that. But you can pick up the shirt. It's now in black or white. It's a little confusing on the site because you can't just hit the drop down and pick the color. It's actually two separate entries in the store. That's just how they have it set up. So if you're a fan of white shirts, you can get the white version. If you are a fan of black shirts, you can get the black version. That sounds very racial, but it's not. So definitely show some support for the show and buy a shirt in our store. Also, by the way, speaking of shirts, shout out to Walter Banasiak from Channel Awesome on YouTube. He's a big fan of the podcast and was spotted by many of you guys who pointed it out to me wearing one of our shirts in his video, which was listing the 10 best Robin Williams performances. It's a like a movie film channel, and so that was the nature of the video. For the record, if I may chime in, my vote goes to One Hour Photo. I thought that was the best performance of Robin Williams I've ever seen, which ironically is one of the few that he had that did not involve comedy. In fact, I think some of his best films were the ones where he was not goofy and funny. Not that I'm not a fan of Mrs. Doubtfire, all the love and respect in the world to those movies, but One Hour Photo to me is the best Robin Williams performance. So there, now you know my my thought on that. And last but not least here, if you want to become a PayPal VIP, you may do so. TheSolomonster.com, you'll see the PayPal button on the right-hand side. $10 or more will get you a nickname and a shout-out here on the show, which is listened to far and wide, all over the world. I want to say thank you as we wind down the year here to John Loose Cannon Lopez, one of our most loyal listeners. Chuck Lunatic Lentz, another longtime listener. Deadpool James Herrera. Beast Mode, Brock Joseph, Out of Control, Cody Thomas, Nemesis, Nathan Moyers, Massgrave, Micah Harshaw, Velvet Revolver, Robert Murray, Keith the Conqueror, Krajnik, the Montreal Mauler, Patrick Pacheco, and Rhiannon the Dolly Lacentin. Very happy birthday to the Dolly. I don't know how old you are, but you're only as old as you feel. Or so they say. So happy birthday. Pro Wrestling Magic is gearing up for its biggest show of the year, which is 1 week from today. This is the final plug for this, and I wanted to mention this up front because this is a special offer that's being extended to you guys. This is an offer that's being extended exclusively to listeners of this podcast. If you do live in the tri-state area here on the East Coast, there's a lot of indie promotions and indie events that you hear about. This is one of the bigger ones. And Pro Wrestling Magic has a show coming up next Sunday, December 11th, 4 p.m. start time. It is their Kingdom Come show, has a main event of JT Dunn against Cody Rhodes, who just got a win at the Ring of Honor Final Battle pay-per-view, which I'm going to talk about a little bit later. And Cody will have his wife, Brandy, at the event in his corner. Plus, they've got tonight's the TLC pay-per-view, which I'm going to do predictions for. But next Sunday, Pro Wrestling Magic's going to have their own TLC tag team match, the return of Joey Ryan, Paul London taking on Leo Rush, a whole lot more. So the address is 106 Bergen Avenue in Ridgefield Park, New Jersey. Now this is important. Go to WrestlingIsMagic.com. If you use the promo code Solomonster, not only will you get $3 off your ticket, but if you are one of the next five Sound Off fans, we're going to extend this to the next five people who hear this, and you use that code, not only will you get the $3 off, but you will also get a free meet and greet before the event with Brandy Rhodes, which includes a photo op and an autograph. So you must use the promo code Solomonster at checkout. Go to WrestlingIsMagic.com. It'll take you to the ticket page and give you all the details you need. So I wanted to mention that up front because the show is a week away, and this is my last chance to plug it. So do go ahead and take advantage of that. If you are a fan of women's wrestling, this was the week for you. We had Sasha Banks and Charlotte headlining Raw for the women's title. We had Jade and Rosemary headlining TNA Impact in a cage for their women's title. And in the one match on Lucha Underground this week, a gauntlet, it was Pentagon Dark against the entire Black Lotus Triad. So a lot of women's action this week. We've got TLC predictions, some TNA news. That's always fun. News coming out of Ring of Honor's Final Battle show, which I did not see, but there was a lot of important stuff that came out of it, so we'll talk about that. But I want to start out with 205 Live. That's the new Cruiserweight show that debuted on the WWE Network last Tuesday. That means no more superstars. The show has been canceled. It's been replaced, essentially, by 205 Live. Main Event, though, lives on, so fear not. You may not be able to get your weekly fix of Jinder Mahal against Titus O'Neil anymore, but you can still get Jimmy Uso against Mojo Rawley. So I enjoyed it. I mean, I enjoyed the show. I thought it was pretty obvious that it was a mistake to tape this after SmackDown. I mean, everybody with a brain would have figured that out when they first made the announcement. I said as much here on the podcast. I think they can air it after SmackDown if they want to, but they should tape it beforehand. You know, you tape it beforehand with a packed house, not half full, which, you know, you got a half full house there. People were leaving. Place that's already seen Dean Ambrose and AJ Styles and Bray Wyatt and Randy Orton and all the big names. And, you know, to go from those guys to the Bollywood boys is asking a lot of people. So I'm not surprised that there were reports of people leaving the building. Now, my man Jack Gallagher finally debuted. He made his in-ring debut on TV here against Arya Daivari. Got a big win over him. Big drop kick in the corner, which looked a lot more devastating than it sounds, believe me. I know some people don't get this guy. They just don't get him. They don't see the appeal. Or, you know, they think that that move he tries where he ties up his opponent in a pretzel and the guy acts like he can't get out is ridiculous. I saw something about that on Facebook. You know what, though? I enjoy the hell out of him. I just think that he's so unique and he's so fluid to watch in the ring that he's a lot of fun. I think he's great. He was one of the revelations for me in that Cruiserweight Classic. I did not know of him beforehand. I really didn't. I knew nothing of the guy beforehand. And now I enjoy it when his music hits and he comes out. So I was happy to see him get... I don't know if it was a visa issue or if he was just finishing up commitments overseas, but I was starting to worry. I'm like, you know, they mentioned him in all the press releases and we haven't seen him. He never debuted on Raw. I was like, is he coming in or not? And so when I saw his name on the release for the show, I was kind of relieved. I'm like, all right, cool. So I was happy to see him. They had video packages for Noam Dar, Grand Metalik, Lince Dorado, who none of whom wrestled on this show, but they did feature them in these videos at least to try to make them out to be special. Metalik and Dorado are special, which you would already know if you watch them in the Cruiserweight Classic. Those guys are, they're a lot of fun to watch. I thought the main event between Rich Swann and Brian Kendrick for the Cruiserweight title was really good. I liked it. A little slow early, but it did pick up, and it turned into a pretty exciting match, I thought. Swann got to the ropes after the bully choke, and he kicked out of a sliced bread, so both of Kendrick's finishing moves, or sliced bread, I guess, used to be his finishing move. He got out of both of those before he beat Kendrick with a spin kick from hell to the face to become the third Cruiserweight champion since WWE reinstated the division. I must say, you know, having watched him on Raw, and again here on this show, Rich Swann has the best spin kick in all of pro wrestling right now. He kicked Noam Dar in the face on Monday, and it made such a sound. The way he does it, it looks absolutely devastating. And that's what I love about it. And I love that he's finishing matches with it. That looks like a kick that's worthy of finishing off your opponent. And he did here. And so Swann is the new Cruiserweight champion. Afterwards, Tom Phillips interviewed him in the ring. He said the one person he wanted to thank was his mother, and even though now, of course, you know, he's got a pretty sad story as far as his upbringing and his parents both, you know, not being here anymore, and he said even though his mom's not here, he knows that she's there in spirit, so that was a nice moment. Kendrick made it clear after the match, they interviewed him in the aisleway, he said it was a fluke, I'm not done with this guy yet, so I assume that means rematch at Roadblock. I guess we'll find out. So overall, I think as a first effort, this was good. This was fine. I'm sure they'll rotate different guys in and out every single week to keep things fresh. The announced team was Mauro Ranallo, Corey Graves, and Austin Aries. And I thought it was really smart to have Aries out there because it gets him on TV, even though he can't wrestle for a few more months. He just had the surgery for the broken orbital bone. He may not be back in the ring until March or April. Right around WrestleMania time. So in the meantime, you know, it's not like the guy is laid up in bed. He's not in traction. He's not on crutches. You may as well use the guy. You know, one of the things he's known for is his mouth and cutting promos. And so I think this is the perfect role for him in the meantime. I took it to mean that he's going to be part of the show every week. You know, not that it was just a 1 week thing. He wore sunglasses the whole time, so you couldn't see his eye. And I think if you didn't know that he had surgery, you would never have known that anything was wrong with him. He was talking about going after the Cruiserweight title, so they seem to be setting him up to join the Cruiserweight division when he heals up. And I know that bothers some people who think he's above that, but you know what? If he does join the Cruiserweight division, that would get him on Raw. Because remember, the Cruiserweights are still on Raw. They have their own show and they're on Raw. So that would get Aries on Monday Night Raw, which I, you know, is not something I was expecting to happen, if ever, for a long time. So that's a good thing. And also, you know, just imagine. I know they haven't used this guy in the Cruiserweight division yet, and I can't understand why. I can't understand why he's been MIA from the main shows for as long as he's been. I don't think he's hurt. I think it's a travesty. But just imagine Austin Aries and Neville in a feud for the Cruiserweight Championship. Like, to me, as we approach WrestleMania, and I'm not saying Aries is going to be physically ready for this year's WrestleMania, but I'm just saying, in terms of a WrestleMania-worthy Cruiserweight title match, as opposed to shoving six or eight guys in the ring together, I think Aries and Neville, I mean, there's a WrestleMania-caliber Cruiserweight Championship match. Like, and it's not just a match. I'd love to see a program, an extended program, multiple matches between those guys. Those are two guys right there, I think, that could carry that division. So it's exciting to think about. It would give Neville something to do. And Aries can be the guy who kind of runs through all these different people in the division, whether it's Neville, whether it's Swan, whether it's, well, I guess Kalisto's not in the division, but, you know, you get the picture. So is it a step down? Yeah, I mean, it's a step down, I guess, from what he was doing previously and where he was slotted in TNA. He was a world champion. Austin Aries, believe me, if he ever gets to that point on Raw or SmackDown, that's a long ways off. Using the Cruiserweight division as a tool to get him on the main roster, to get him on the main shows, to me, is not a bad thing. It's not a bad thing at all. And yes, believe it or not, Neville is still a part of the Raw roster. I know it's hard to believe, but he is. Monday Night Raw this past week was live from Charlotte, North Carolina. Raw Twitter poll, over 2,000 votes, even more than usual. 61% thumbs up, 39% thumbs down. So people were extra motivated to vote because overwhelmingly they liked this show. This was another good episode of Raw, according to these folks. And I don't think they're too far off. I enjoyed the show overall. I mean, I didn't enjoy everything about it, but overall I thought it was a good effort. Sasha Banks, for the third time now this year alone on Raw, has won the Women's Championship. She beat Charlotte in Charlotte in a Falls Count Anywhere, no disqualification match. In fact, Cedric Alexander and Charlotte both were born in Charlotte, and they both lost on this show. So no love for the hometown peeps. It's becoming a running joke at this point that all of Sasha's title wins have come on Raw. I don't know what they're doing in terms of flip-flopping the title so many times, but I do know one thing. I thought that this was their best match yet. I thought this was the best Sasha-Charlotte match that I've seen to date. I enjoyed the hell out of this match. They chopped the shit out of each other. Sasha destroyed her with kendo stick shots. I mean, Jesus Christ, did she work this woman over with that kendo stick? You could see the welts all up and down Charlotte's arms as the match went on. And Charlotte didn't look too happy either. She kept, every time Sasha would swing it, she would try to grab it and pull it away from her. And Sasha was, she was having none of it. She just kept whipping her and firing away. This was honestly, when I think back to this match, I mean, just in terms of the women's matches, it's not like they went through flaming tables or thumbtacks or anything like that, but this was more extreme than their Hell in a Cell match was. It was no DQ. They made use of that no DQ stipulation. It was false count anywhere. They made use. They took advantage of the stip. They brawled up the ramp onto the stage. They brawled over where the announcers are, which I think is the first time that anybody's done that since the announcers were moved to the back of the building. Charlotte threw Sasha off the stage, which sounds more impressive than it really is. These days, maybe it's a, I don't know what, a 3-foot drop maybe. But Charlotte then climbed up on the announce desk and did a moonsault off the announce table down onto Sasha Banks. They then brawled into the crowd. They brawled up the staircase in the crowd. And it was, I thought it was a very unique finish. Sasha basically, you know, Charlotte is very bendy. Charlotte is a former gymnast. And she's one of these women, kind of like Melina back in the day when people used to, like Natty or somebody would put Melina in the sharpshooter. You can bend her all the way back. And so you can't do that with just anyone, but Charlotte you can. And so they did this unique finish where Sasha took Charlotte and basically put her body between the the hand railing when you're walking down the staircase to get to your seat. She put her body kind of in between the hand railing and pulled back for the bank statement. And Charlotte immediately tapped out. It was very sudden, kind of out of nowhere, but it did look painful. It would look cool. I mean, I've never seen that before. Crowd went nuts. They loved it. They were totally into this. Sasha went back into the ring. Ric Flair made an unannounced appearance, the first, I think, since Charlotte basically fired him on TV. And he raised Sasha's arm. And because he's like a god there in Charlotte, I thought that was quite the endorsement to have her, to have this woman headline Raw, win the championship, and have her hand raised in Charlotte by Ric Flair. That's a pretty cool night for her. Now, I know that there was a lot of bitching about, oh my god, not this match again. Please let, I mean, you know, this is not the first time we've seen these two women face off in the last few months, and a lot of people just had the attitude, enough! Enough already! Even Emma and Summer Rae. You know, I don't know if they were in character or not, but they both went on Twitter and they said enough is enough. And I agree in that they need to move on from this now, because this match felt like a blow-off. And I think that it should be treated as a blow-off. I don't think there's any reason to... I mean, I guess Charlotte is owed a rematch, and so we're probably going to get a rematch at Roadblock. I guess when you think of it like that... I don't know, I mean, they were talking about this like this is it, and it felt like a blow-off, but they have that stupid rematch stipulation where everybody has to get a rematch. Everybody needs a rematch if they lose their title, and so around and around we go, and it's like, okay, so if she loses it, then the other girl gets a rematch, and then they have the rematch, and then she wins it, and then, well, the other woman gets a rematch, and so it's this never-ending cycle. I think they need to break the cycle and leave this alone. I think this was great. Enough to stand on its own. They can move on from this now. But I mean, the match on Monday was so good. I don't, you know, how can you hate on this? I could see people just wanting to do something different now and move on from this, but you can't hate on this match. I can't hate on this. And apparently the match held steady in the ratings too, which is quite the success for that third hour. So that's another feather in the cap for both these women. They originally started the match earlier in the show. It only went about 2 or 3 minutes. They went to a count out. Mick Foley came out. He said, no. We're not ending this match like this. And that's when he added the false count anywhere, no DQ stips, and booked the match for later in the show. So they teased it and it worked. People stuck around, which they don't always do for that last hour with the men. So that's a good sign. So, with Sasha winning, there's a couple of different ways they could go with this. The most obvious one, and I hope they don't do this, but the most obvious one would be they do the rematch at Roadblock. Ric Flair, who apparently is going to be back full-time now on the Raw brand on TV, Ric Flair turns on Sasha and reunites with Charlotte at Roadblock to help his daughter win back the championship. That would be unbelievably lame and predictable. Which, if this company was a person, that would be in its Tinder profile, I know. But the plan that I like more would be quit playing hot potato with the belt and build to Bayley against Sasha at WrestleMania. You could throw Charlotte in there, you can make it a three-way, but I don't know. To me, that would be too much like what they did this year. All you're doing is you're swapping Becky out for Bayley. I'd prefer one-on-one Sasha against Bayley. I'd actually prefer Sasha as a heel going into that feud, because I think she's arrogant enough the way that she carries herself. She's a natural in that role. That's why I think it worked so well the first time they did it in NXT, is because Sasha was such a bitch to Bayley. People wanted to see Bayley just kind of give her what she had coming to her. When she did, it blew the roof off the place. Now they're all buddy-buddy, they're best friends. I mean, you could still do the match, they could still be baby faces, but I think it would be even stronger if they did it the other way. And believe me, it would not be very hard to find a way to turn some, pretty much anybody who's feuding with Bayley. You could probably put Mahatma Gandhi in there and turn him heel against Bayley. But again, they don't have to turn anybody if they don't want to still make that match happen. So that then leaves Charlotte out of the picture at WrestleMania. That's the only problem. I'm not quite sure who she feuds with at that point. I don't know how strong they're going to push Emma. Is Emma even going to debut? They're still running these Emmalina vignettes every Monday, and it's been about 2 months now, or 6 months, it feels like. I don't know when she's going to debut. And when she does, if it's going to be a Funkasaurus thing where every week we're getting these vignettes about Emmalina, and then she comes back doing something completely different. Like it's an inside rib or something. I don't know what the hell's going on with her. But right now I look at that Raw roster, and I mean, provided that Charlotte remains a heel, which I think she should, I don't think Charlotte and Nia Jax would work, so I don't know. I guess Charlotte and Dana Brooke. I mean, it's not a match I want to see, but I can at least tolerate it if it's not for the championship. You know, like if they keep the title with Sasha and Bayley and let Charlotte and Dana just have a singles match, I could live with that. That would be okay. So I guess that probably is the one that makes the most sense. But the other idea that I had, just thinking about it now, I guess if there really is nobody else on that Raw brand, what you could do is... Because here's the thing. I mean, Charlotte is the best woman they have on either roster. Some people might disagree with that. Some people might say Becky. Some people may say, hey, what about Natty? You know, Natty is good, but I also think some people tend to overrate things when it comes to Natty. To me, Charlotte is the best woman they have on either roster, not counting Asuka in NXT. So you can't leave her off the card at WrestleMania. She has to be on there. Maybe you do Raw versus SmackDown. I figure they're going to have at least one or two Raw versus SmackDown matches at Mania. I think Mania, you can get away with doing that. And maybe you do one for the women, and you do one for the men. And the one for the women has Charlotte in it, and it's Charlotte against Nikki or Becky. I think that might work. So, that's two ideas right there. You could do Charlotte and Dana, but not for the belt, or you could do Raw versus SmackDown with Charlotte as kind of the queen representing Raw. I think either one of those ideas would work if she was not going to be in the championship picture. Roman Reigns beat Kevin Owens with a spear in a non-title match here on the show to earn himself a Universal title opportunity at Roadblock, end of the line. Are you as tired of hearing that as I am? It's only been 1 week. Roadblock, end of the line. Roadblock, end of the line. I guess that's the new WWE Fastlane. It's the latest in robot speak from this company. That's become pretty apparent to me, is that this company is great at programming robots. Not so much at scripting actual human dialogue. So they are, in fact, George Lucas. I believe there was a 5 minute long rear chin lock in this match by Owens. Riveting stuff. Maybe he'll shoot for six at the pay-per-view. This was no surprise, the fact that Reigns would win after the PPG Paints Arena, one of those great names, leaked what the main event would be a few weeks ago. I still think it's a mistake to put Reigns back in the Universal title picture so soon. It'd be an even bigger mistake to put the championship on him. I see these reports online that they're going to make him a double champion. Consider the source. I don't believe that. I'm not saying they can't do it, but I don't buy it. I don't think he's winning the championship. I certainly hope not. Andrew tweeted me during the show on Monday. He said, I guess WWE is just pretending the U.S. title doesn't exist anymore, since Reigns only seems concerned about the Universal title. And as I said in my reply to Andrew, don't worry, the title is being elevated, right? It's being elevated so high, it can no longer be seen. And part of the reason it can no longer be seen is because he's probably carrying it over his back. So that's probably why you can't see it. But, I mean, in all seriousness, I have no idea why they put the U.S. title on Roman Reigns. Now that he's had it for a few months, I look back and I'm like, why'd they put this title on this guy? I mean, why put the title on him if this is the way it's going to be treated? The way he carries it to the ring over his back, it almost looks like more of an annoyance to him than anything else. And he never defends it. I mean, what they should have done is they should have found a way, and I guess they still could, but I don't see that happening. They should have found a way to get that title on Chris Jericho. At least then you'd have this whole, you know, best friends thing, and Kevin Owens has the Universal title, Chris Jericho has the U.S. title, and you can kind of make sense of it. And I'm sure Jericho would probably defend it more than Reigns has. Because right now, you know, I look at this, and the U.S. title, it's no more special than it was before. And it's like, all right, well, maybe their intent wasn't to make the title special. The title is, it's just a prop. It's a secondary belt. Who cares? But it's gonna help Reigns. No, it's not doing either. The title is certainly no more special than it was before. If anything, it's less special. Reigns has gained nothing from holding it because it just looks so out of place. I mean, he's still pretty much, you know, booked as the top guy. It's not like him having the title is doing anything for him. And he doesn't even defend it. So apparently he learned well from Dean Ambrose. I guess too much paperwork. Doesn't want to defend it. So Reigns also drove a wedge on this show for real this time between Owens and Chris Jericho in the opening segment. Owens had told Jericho to shut up as Jericho was getting ready to put Reigns on the list. So the best friends may be no more. And as Jericho went to leave the building, Seth Rollins attacked him in the parking garage, gave him a pedigree on the roof of a car. This reminded me of when Undertaker gave The Rock a tombstone on the roof of a car on SmackDown many years ago. Which must have been hell on his knees. Actually, this move too, I guess the pedigree, you're landing on your knees. Sami Zayn attacked Braun Strowman, tried to get revenge for what Strowman did to him, but instead he got put in the Tree of Woe. He was about to get his ass handed to him again. Mick Foley and a bunch of referees came out to stop him and call him off. Call off the dogs before he could do any more damage. So this made Sami Zayn very upset. We had an in-ring promo exchange between Zayn and Foley, which I thought was good. I thought it got intense. They had words in the ring. Foley said, sometimes people need to be saved from themselves. And Sami said, I don't need to be saved from myself. I need to be saved from you. And Mick Foley did what Mick Foley has done many, many times since becoming the general manager. He began screaming. So much so, in fact, that his false bottom teeth came loose, and he had to spit them out and throw them on the ground so that he could keep the promo going. Now, Sami Zayn, these guys were practically nose to nose. I mean, Zayn was right up in Foley's face as he was speaking. How he didn't vomit right then and there, I'll never know, because I think if that were me, if I were Sami Zayn, I would have puked right there all over Foley. It would have been quite the scene in the middle of that ring. So Zayn said that if they stopped the match every single time you were in there, Mick, with somebody who people thought you couldn't beat, you never would have been WWE champion. And he called Foley a hypocrite, and then he walked off. What he should have said was, now go pick up your teeth, and then walked out. That would have made him look like a real badass, but I guess people still like Foley, so he would have come off as a little bit of a jerk had he done that. Obviously, they're going somewhere with Sami. The fact that Sami's even getting any kind of in-ring promo time, to me, I'll take it, because they were doing jack shit with this guy just a month ago, and I trust that they have some kind of idea in mind for him. I don't know if in the end he's going to be traded to SmackDown or not. I think that would be a better place for him, but we'll see. I guess we'll see where this goes. The fact, like I said, he's getting promo time in the ring, and they're doing something with him and the GM of the show, to me, is a good thing. There was a pre-taped skit from a local bar called Blackfin Ameripub with Sheamus and Cesaro. I like this. It reminded me of something that we would see on Raw in the Attitude Era when they used to do more of these segments kind of on location, like when the APA would go to Tim White's bar. The Friendly Tap, I think, whenever they were in Rhode Island. And I like stuff like that generally. I tell you what it reminded me of. It reminded me of the time that Mark Henry took China out on a date. If you remember when Mark Henry was doing the sexual chocolate thing and he was courting China. He just wanted to take her out on a date, and finally she acquiesced and said, okay, I'll go with you. And they ended up at some bar, and this one dude started hitting on China and just acting like a real douche, acting like pretty much anybody you would find at a bar on a Friday night. And she just kept telling him, get lost, get lost. And the guy just goes, yo, I'm talking to you, bitch. And that was all she needed to hear. She got up, she waffled the guy. Mark Henry, who was dancing and smiling and having a good time, all of a sudden he turned to like ass-kicking Mark Henry, and he grabbed one of the guy's friends and threw him halfway across the bar. Those were fun times. I remember that. That was one of the more memorable segments like that they did back in the day. So the way this all played out, I'm not saying it was as good as that, but it kind of reminded me of that. Basically, Sheamus and Cesaro coming off their loss to the New Day. They're at the bar. They're talking like this is it. Their run is over. After losing to the New Day, they were happy that they never have to team again because they don't like each other. But at the same time, they acknowledge that, hey, you know, what a hell of a team you and I would make if we actually liked each other. Now, of course, if they hate each other so much and they're forced to team up in the ring on camera when they're at work, it begs the question, why would they be in a bar drinking together off work, outside the work hours? That was never really explained. But nevertheless, Tessa Blanchard made a brief cameo in this, by the way. Mrs. Ricochet looking fine, as always. So some guys started heckling the two of them at the bar. One of the guys burped in Cesaro's face. It's kind of like, what's the expression? You don't tug on Superman's cape or fart in his face or something like that. I could practically hear Vince McMahon on headset belly laughing at the whole burping gag, because that just sounds like a Vince McMahon idea. So they ended up beating everybody up and throwing one of the guys through a wall that must have been made of tissue paper. This was a fight scene pretty much right out of any buddy cop movie, any B-level buddy cop movie you've ever seen. And after they were done admiring their handiwork and everybody had been laid out, the two of them toasted each other with a Guinness, and Cesaro just stood there smiling and refused to drink it. It's like, at least take a sip. At least pretend. You know what I mean? Like, look, I don't blame you, Guinness. Guinness is like a freaking meal. I don't drink Guinness very often either, but Jesus, I mean, at least take a sip. So I still enjoyed this. Again, I was surveying some feedback on Facebook and on my my timeline, and there was some hate for it. Look, it was different. It was different. And I also liked the segment they did for Halloween where Truth took Goldust to a haunted house. And I don't like anything that they do with Goldust and R-Truth, but I enjoyed that. And I think most people hated that segment or they thought it was stupid. So, to each their own. But I generally speaking, am a fan of these segments where they kind of go off-site for these things, just to break up the monotony of the show. The show is so formulaic, and it's so predictable, and it's so, like, everything just is the same exact thing. You know that at some point they're going to go to the back, and Stephanie McMahon and Mick Foley are going to be standing there with those stupid pictures in the background, and they're going to be talking, and somebody's going to interrupt, and then we're going to go to a match, and then we're going to go to a break, and it's like on and on and on, and it never changes. You know, it never changes. So when they do stuff like this, it's different. I like that. Funny enough, the black dude in this segment who got all up in Sheamus' face at the bar was spotted later in the show at the arena on TV in the crowd where Sasha and Charlotte were brawling. So I guess Sheamus, he beat the piss out of that guy so much that he gained respect for these guys and he bought a ticket and went to Raw. I didn't even notice it during the show. I saw a meme on some Facebook page about it, and they had like a split shot of the guy at the bar and the guy in the crowd. I'm like, yep, that's the same guy. I just thought that was amusing. New Day retained their tag team titles yet again over Anderson and Gallows. Just as soon as the sun rises in the east, you know that Anderson and Gallows are getting their asses handed to them by the New Day. They pinned Carl Anderson again. Who else? He's always the one taking the fall here. Xavier Woods had a fistful of tights for the win. I mean, now, to be fair, so did Anderson, and Woods kind of rolled through and reversed it, and then he grabbed the tights, so tit for tat. But still, very interesting that New Day wins another match by very suspect means. They've been doing this quite a bit lately. Curious to see if it actually leads somewhere. And then the show ended with Sasha winning the title, which I already talked about. So not a bad show, and I thought the main event was great, despite the fact that I am ready to move on to a new feud. But this was good stuff. SmackDown Live, which has a pay-per-view tonight, which I'm going to talk about here in just a second. Bray Wyatt and Randy Orton, as I suspected, as I said last week, they probably would, did in fact beat American Alpha in the main event here on the show to earn themselves a tag team championship match tonight at TLC against Heath Slater and Rhino. I like seeing Jordan and Gable in the main event. I like that. I like that they gave these guys the final match, even if it was just for 1 week. I think if they play their cards right with both these guys as a team, even as singles down the road, there should be plenty of main events in their future. But in terms of this one, I thought they had an excellent showing. I know people were not happy about Luke Harper losing again. I got emails about this. He lost yet again to Demon Kane. And not only did he lose, he lost with like a weak choke slam. It wasn't even like this big finish or a tombstone or so, or, you know, just a weak looking choke slam. Now, but the thing with this is, I'm not going to get all up in arms about this yet, because I think this is going somewhere. So I would advise you not to get too upset about it yet. If a month from now it still hasn't gone anywhere, then be as upset as you want to be. But they did have a segment earlier in the night with the Wyatts backstage where Randy Orton interrupted Bray and he kind of turned to Harper and he asked Harper, are you willing to do what it takes? Kind of the way that Randy did at Survivor Series when he took that spear. He took that bullet for Bray and helped them win the match. And Harper got all up in Orton's face. He did not seem very happy to be shown up by Randy Orton. It's almost like Bray has embraced Orton as part of the Wyatt family. He doesn't realize that Orton is probably just scheming, because that's what he does, right? He's a snake. He's a viper. But Harper's not buying any of his bullshit, so he doesn't like Orton very much. And I'm thinking what's going on here is Orton is playing mind games with the entire family, and he's trying to drive a wedge between Bray Wyatt and Luke Harper. And all of this losing that Harper's been doing lately is leading to him either being excommunicated from the family or something. This is going somewhere. So I think this is all part of a bigger story with Randy Orton. And I'm taking a wait-and-see approach to see if, in fact, it does go that way. After talking last week on the podcast about how they need to have AJ Styles come out and absolutely destroy James Ellsworth after all these losses to him. They've got to give AJ an edge. They've got to show his more violent side. He can't just be the guy who comes out and he's cocky and arrogant and just gets kind of smacked up the head and bounces around and he's kind of all goofy and stuff. He's got to have an edge to him. And they did just that this week. Ellsworth was out there with Dean Ambrose for an Ambrose Asylum segment in the ring. Styles came out. He ended up shoving Ellsworth into Ambrose. Ambrose, he got laid out. AJ threw him into the steel steps. AJ gets back in the ring with Ellsworth, and he did exactly what the WWE champion should be doing. He punished Ellsworth for embarrassing him. He made him pay the price. He hit him in the back with a chair. He gave him a Styles Clash off the steel steps onto the floor. So he didn't Styles Clash him on the steps, although it did look like his head, from the angle they shot this, it kind of looked like, oh shit, like his head was very close to hitting the steps. It may not have been, but he stood on the steps. He dove off, gave him a Styles Clash on the floor. In my head, all I could think as I watched this was, don't tuck your chin. Whatever you do, don't tuck your chin. And then I realized this guy has no chin, so he'll be fine. He did a stretcher job afterwards. Ambrose left in an ambulance with him. He blamed himself for what happened. He kept saying, I'm going to fix this. I'm going to fix this. This was exactly what it needed to be. It gives AJ Styles an edge, and for the people who like James Ellsworth, it gives them a reason to want to see Ambrose kick this guy's ass tonight and take his championship. And Ellsworth, whether you like him or not, when he comes out, he gets a big reaction. The people like him. I think at some point they will get sick and tired of him. But that's why I think the best thing probably for him is to make him a lackey after what happened here for AJ and put the two of them together, but we'll see. But I do think that at least here, they did exactly what had to be done, and they set this match up tonight perfectly. And now the people who want to see AJ get his comeuppance will watch, and will hope that AJ loses the championship. And I think they'll have a good match. So this leads us into predictions for TLC, which is tonight on pay-per-view. Hopefully I have better luck with these than I did my Survivor Series predictions last month. Yikes. I generally do pretty well with these, but not last month. For those who want to take part, Wrestle Rumble is having a TLC Pick'em contest. First place winner gets $500 plus two lower level tickets to NXT TakeOver in Toronto, or I was going to say Toronto, in San Antonio. You can go to Toronto, but there ain't going to be no show there. So you get two lower level tickets to NXT TakeOver in San Antonio. Second and third place winners each get $100 a piece. The pools are now open. Fill out an entry form before 8 p.m. tonight if you want your entry to count. Which I would certainly hope it does count, because you're paying for it. So WrestleRumble.com is the place to go if you want to buy yourself entry into the Pick'em contest. So let's run this card down from bottom to top. Give my predictions on who I think is walking out with the W. We have Nikki Bella against Carmella. Carmella, who took a legit black eye, I think, from Nikki on SmackDown this week. I'm going to go with Nikki. It's a no DQ match. I think Carmella's gotten a lot of little wins here and there over her, and I think at this point, Nikki is due for a win. Simple as that. So I think Nikki is going to get the win. We have Baron Corbin and Kalisto, in a chairs match, which is still one of the dumbest matches in WWE. I'm sorry, but it is, and I think I said that last week, second only to the dreaded stairs match, which I'm very thankful they have retired, although I got worried a little bit because on SmackDown, I forgot to mention this on SmackDown, that in the segment with Becky and Alexa, it was a contract signing segment, and they were up on the ropes, and Alexa pushed Becky back, and Becky took a table bump, and so backstage she was nursing her back, they were interviewing her outside the trainer's office, and Becky said that she basically called Alexa a bitch, said that she was going to get her revenge on her at the pay-per-view. But in the promo, she was saying, I don't care what kind of match it is, that, you know, because she found out that they had just made their match a tables match. She's like, oh, it could be a tables match, a stairs match. And I'm like, oh, shit. She mentioned stairs. I hope that doesn't mean that they're going to bring it back at some point. So that kind of that got me a little scared there. But Corbin and Kalisto is a chairs match. I think Corbin gets the win. Although Kalisto, I guess if you look at the two of them side by side, believably speaking, this is the kind of match that gives Kalisto the most believable chance of beating somebody like Corbin if he just beats the shit out of him with a steel chair. But I think in the end, Corbin's going to win. And I think he should win. Heath Slater and Rhino against Bray Wyatt and Randy Orton for the SmackDown Tag Team titles. I think we're getting new champs. I think we should get new champs. I think it's going to be Orton and Bray. Becky Lynch and Alexa, as I said, tables match for the Women's Championship. I think this match opens the show, if I had to make a prediction about what opens it. And I mentioned, you know, again, Becky took that table bump on SmackDown during the contract signing. WWE logic would indicate that that means Alexa is the one going through a table tonight. But the table stipulation gives them an easy out for Becky if they want to take the title off her without actually, like, pinning her and beating her. And then she could win it back from Alexa at the Royal Rumble. You know, I think Alexa's been smoking it on the mic lately. I just think she's great. And the other thing is also with the tables match. And Alexa Bliss is so tiny. I mean, I'm serious. I mean, think back to the Hell in a Cell pay-per-view, the match between Sasha and Charlotte. And they brought the tables in. And I'm not just talking the table on the outside where the leg kind of broke. They had a table in the ring. And I guess part of the finish was supposed to be Sasha going through that table in the corner. And Sasha's so small, she just kind of rolled off the table. And it made for a very awkward-looking finish because she doesn't weigh that much. You know, you can't take somebody who's so tiny and expect that the table, unless it's completely gimmicked, is going to just collapse. And Alexa Bliss is a tiny, tiny person. And so unless she's just doing this big dive off the top rope, and that'd be about the only way, I think, to do this, is if she's got... Now, here's a finish I can see if Becky were to win. Now that I say this, I can see a finish where she's got Becky laid on the table. Alexa goes up top to do her, it used to be the Sparkle Splash. I just forgot the new name for it. Twisted Bliss. She goes up top to do Twisted Bliss. Becky moves. And so in doing the her little moonsault or whatever off the, it's not a moonsault, but her jump off the ropes, she goes through the table. I think that probably would give her enough momentum to actually break the table. But that, look, that's got to be a consideration. She's not a big girl. I'm not even sure the table would break if you tried to put her through one. So I just think I think we could get a title change here and they could swap the belt back at the Rumble next month. But if not, if I'm wrong in that prediction, then I do think that that will be the finish. I think she'll go for Twisted Bliss, Becky will move, and Alexa will crash and burn. The Miz and Dolph Ziggler, ladder match for the Intercontinental Championship. This should be good. This could steal the show, considering who's involved and the ladder being involved. If you watched Talking Smack last week, Ziggler apparently joined the NWO. He was wearing an NWO shirt on the show, which is just what they need. More enhancement guys in the NWO. I think Ziggler's going to win it. I think he will... become the new Intercontinental Champion. I'm not quite sure why they changed the belt back to Miz in the first place, but they did. But I don't know. I just feel like Ziggler's getting the belt back. And they're going to have that big moment where he pulls it down and the place goes crazy. Main event is a TLC match for the WWE Championship. AJ Styles and Dean Ambrose. I think AJ is retaining. I don't know anybody who thinks Dean is winning. Not that he couldn't, but... I do think that Styles is going to retain the championship. And, you know, one of the things that I had been thinking about, and I mentioned this on the podcast, is that maybe James Ellsworth, again, they'll go back to the finish from TLC 2012, where AJ Lee pushed Cena off the ladder and turned on him and went with Dolph. And they'll do the same thing where Ellsworth betrays Ambrose and he becomes a lackey for AJ. They could do that, although looking at what they did on Tuesday, I think it would be nuts less than a week later for them to have Ellsworth back out there. I mean, the guy did a stretcher job last week. He was carted out in an ambulance, you know, Styles Clash on the arena floor. To have him run out there just perfectly fine after what happened on Tuesday, I think is way, way too soon. Not that he can't still betray Ambrose at some point. Maybe he'll, you know, look, Ambrose was guilty on Tuesday. He felt guilty. Oh, it's my fault. I'm going to fix this. Don't worry. And they could easily play it up where, you know, Ellsworth blames him for what happened, you know? And so therefore, that's the impetus for turning on Dean. But I just think it's too soon after what they did on Tuesday. So I don't know that we're going to be seeing him tonight. But I do think, however it happens, that AJ is going to retain the championship. And should. So, those are my predictions for TLC. I am planning on doing a post show, which would go up on YouTube. And so that's something you might want to watch for. Now would be a good time to go ahead and subscribe to the channel on YouTube if you have not already done so.
I'm actually not wearing pants, and that's how I watch NXT every single week.
I've got some NXT spoilers here. One on the title match between Samoa Joe and Shinsuke Nakamura from the show in Osaka yesterday. One on an injury at the NXT tapings this past week. And one on the newest member of the NXT announced team. So if you do not want to hear about any of these things, skip ahead. I would skip ahead by about 10 minutes or so. As I expected, Nakamura did beat Samoa Joe yesterday in Japan to win back the NXT championship. At least someone won in their hometown this week. Jeez. They are going to air the match in full on NXT this Wednesday. They're also apparently taping a show in Melbourne on their tour of Australia that's coming up. They're taping that for the network as well. I believe it's supposed to be, or it's being advertised as Joe and Nakamura in a steel cage for the NXT championship. And so that match, maybe, you know, for TV, they work it where Joe gets a rematch, right? So maybe that will also air on the network. That they haven't mentioned. That's just me speculating that perhaps if they are taping stuff from Australia on the network, I don't know why that wouldn't be it. I don't know what else they would tape. That, to me, would be the rematch you could tape to air on NXT a few weeks from now. And so I suspected they did that title change in Toronto just to make it a bigger deal in Japan when he won it back, and that's exactly what they did. And I have no problem with it. I think that's fine. I think people, look, I also complain about things that they do when they switch titles back and forth, and why did they do this, and why did they do that? At the end of the day, stuff like that, like this here, that doesn't bother me. I don't really see what the big deal is. You know, I'm not quite sure why they didn't mention that Joe was the first person to beat Nakamura, because unless I missed it, they haven't actually mentioned that fact one time on TV, that Nakamura was undefeated and Joe was the first man to hand him his first loss. That's a little weird to me that they haven't mentioned that unless I missed it, but I have no problem with that. That's fine. You know, I think it's a cool thing that they did. Yeah, they could have had Nakamura just retain the title in Japan, but it's a bigger moment, him winning the championship. It is. It's a much bigger moment. And he becomes only the second man ever to become a two-time NXT champion. At the NXT tapings at Full Sail this week, the Authors of Pain were taking on a couple of indie guys, and they powerbombed one of them onto his partner in the ring, this guy Anthony Bowens, who was laying on the mat. His partner got powerbombed on top of him, and his partner's head went right into his face on the way down. Messed him up pretty bad. They knew immediately backstage something was wrong. He may have been concussed. I don't know. Apparently they're keeping him still in Florida for the time being for further evaluation. So he's not allowed to fly or leave or go anywhere. Hopefully it's nothing too serious. I saw the fan video of it on, I think, Ryan Satin's YouTube channel. It looked pretty brutal. But you know what? In watching the video, it looked more like just a case of bad positioning than anything else. I know these guys are still green. They're still very inexperienced. They're kind of rough in there. They're very big. They're very powerful. Stuff like this can happen. It's not necessarily recklessness or carelessness. I didn't see that from the video that I watched. It was just bad positioning. I mean, had he been over a few inches, he would have been, you know, I mean, Bowen would have taken the full brunt of the impact on his body. It just so happened the guy was a few inches over and his head collided with his face. So I chalk it up as an accident that could have happened to anybody. It's not like these two guys have this string of, like Vader broke a jobber's back in the ring once, giving him a powerbomb. Like back in the day, I think like the newer fans now have no idea how brutal it could be for these enhancement guys and these indie guys back in the day. I mean, go back and watch whether it's WCW or WWF. You know, Vader in WCW, go watch the Steiners or the Beverly Brothers. I mean, I pointed that clip out before of the Beverly Brothers giving that poor guy the Shaker Heights spike. How that guy didn't break his neck and wasn't paralyzed, I'll never know. I mean, they roughed these guys up big time back in the day. You really don't see much of that now. Like, Braun Strowman's in there throwing guys around and it looks impressive, but believe me, that ain't nothing compared to how some of these jobbers got treated back in the day. So it's not like the authors of Pain have a rep of being, injuring guys left and right or anything like that. I chalk it up as an accident. Hopefully it doesn't happen again. And finally, instead of replacing Corey Graves, they actually did what they love to do now, which is let's add more people to the announce booth. So they added a third member to the NXT announce team, Percy Watson. Percy Watson, if that name sounds familiar, he was on one of those early seasons of NXT on Sci-Fi Network, when back when the show was, you know, they were pairing guys off with like veteran wrestlers, and it was more of a game show than a wrestling show. He always had a good look. I'm still not quite sure why they cut him, but I haven't heard his name mentioned in years. But they just love their three-man announce teams. Boy, let me tell you know, I thought this might have marked the end of an era. Here, the end of the two-man booth, but apparently it was pointed out to me that Tom Phillips and David Otunga still call main event. At least until they add Corey Graves to that show also, because, you know, the guy doesn't have enough to do. Someone mentioned to me, I think it was Grant on Twitter. I thought I had it written down here, but he mentioned that the NXT show had a three-man booth a couple of years ago. And I do remember that. That is true. There was a period where they actually did have three announcers. The thing is, it's not that... I'm not ripping it just because, oh, it's three and three is always crap. You know, there are people who disagree with me when I rant on the three-man booths and say, well, you know, in football, like Monday Night Football, or maybe not Monday Night Football now. I don't even know. I haven't watched Monday Night Football in so long. I don't know if it's a two-man booth or a three-man booth. But, you know, in pro sports, you have three-man booths. Look, in my opinion, my favorite announce team in any sport or form of entertainment is the New York Mets. And yes, I am partial because I'm a Mets fan, but I know people who aren't Mets fans. I know people who are Yankees fans who hate the Mets, who also agree. Gary Cohen, Ron Darling, and some of you may know Ron Darling because he also does the playoff games on TBS, but Gary Cohen, Ron Darling, and Keith Hernandez are freaking awesome. They are the best three-man booth of any kind in any sport anywhere, as far as I'm concerned, certainly that I've heard. I haven't heard all of them, true, but they're awesome. So it's not that I inherently hate three-man booths and they can't work. It's not inherently a bad thing. And look, even in wrestling, even in WWE, there have been times over the years where I've liked some of their three-man booths. Now, it only lasted two pay-per-views back in 93, but I actually liked Jim Ross, Bobby Heenan, and Randy Savage together. Especially at the King of the Ring that year. That's one of my favorite pay-per-views. Now, I know some people are hit or miss on Savage as an announcer. You know, to some people, his voice on commentary was like nails on a chalkboard, and he never really added anything. I'm not saying he was great, but he had his own style about him. I liked him. I also like Vince McMahon, Jerry Lawler, and Jim Ross most of the time when they would do commentary together. But when JR wasn't playing up his heel shtick and ragging on Vince, and he was just playing it straight, I will say it was kind of pointless to have him and Vince together since they essentially played the same role. At least when he was kind of healing it up in late 96 and he was making fun of Vince and his toupee. And that was actually kind of amusing. You know, in WCW, when they had Tony Schiavone, Bobby Heenan, and Mike Tenay, Tenay served a purpose. He was there specifically and only because he was the only one of the three who was actually familiar with all of the luchadors. When they brought in all the luchadors and even some of the Japanese stars and the cruiserweight guys, because he had called shows in Mexico before. He might have been one of the announcers on that AAA When Worlds Collide pay-per-view in 94, which I think WCW had a hand in producing, or they had something to do with that. That might have been where they even kind of realized like who Tenay was and how good he was at commentary. But so he knew the names of all the holds and their histories and all that kind of stuff. He served a purpose. And I don't think he called the entire show either. Back then, WCW was doing a deal where they had one announced team for Hour 1, a second announced team for Hour 2, which, by the way, is an idea that I proposed many moons ago. Raw's a three-hour show. Why can't you cut it up and have two different announce crews? But they didn't do that. Today, though, it serves no purpose to me. In wrestling, three-man booths serve absolutely no purpose because they don't have that many great announcers. Let's be honest here. This is not a secret. I like Corey Graves. Michael Cole, yes, he does tend to get a bad rap. When he's on his A game, Michael Cole is actually very good. I'm not saying they're all garbage, but if I look at wrestling announcers now, like in WWE, and Mauro Ranallo is another one, he's also very, very good. But it's not like they have this wealth of great professional wrestling commentators. They don't. They don't. I hope Steve Corino, even though he seems to be coming in as a trainer, at some point, they will hopefully give him a shot on commentary as a color guy, maybe on NXT. That would seem to make the most sense if he's working with those guys. And I happen to like Corino, and I think in that role he's very good. So that's a good thing, bringing him in. They may never use him in that role, but maybe they will. But they don't have this great wealth of wonderful wrestling commentators anymore. And if they are out there, and I'm not even saying JR, apparently they just don't have any interest in bringing them in. Maybe they don't look pretty enough. I don't know. Maybe they're too old. So having three of them out there serves no purpose. And sometimes it even distracts from what's going on because you have too many voices. The whole thing with Tom Phillips now being the host of SmackDown, it's comical to me. You would think by now they would build a bigger announce desk. They literally have no room for him. He's kind of off to the side. He looks like an outcast. Why is he out there? This whole bigger is better is such bullshit. Bigger is not always better. Now when it comes to this, that's my beef with it. And we'll see. Maybe Percy Watson is this great announcer. I haven't heard him yet. I'm not, you know, passing judgment yet on the NXT announce team. I'm just talking about this infatuation about expanding the size of all of these announce teams. We need three. We need four. Soon it'll be six. Somebody joked. They sent me a tweet. They said, every time I hear about WWE adding new announcers, it reminded him of, I guess there's a scene in one of the Naked Gun movies. I don't know if it's a baseball game or whatever, but I saw it online where you see this row. It's like it's like a row of like six announcers all lined up next to each other. I got news for you. That's where they're headed. It's just a matter of time before we get a six-man announce booth. I'm sure on one of these joint brand pay-per-views coming up soon, that's exactly what we're going to get. NXT this week was taped from Ottawa, Canada, the site of last week's SmackDown. Asuka made short work of a local talent, Nicole Matthews, with the Asuka Lock. She's actually based out of Vancouver. I know Canadians can be very sensitive about their provinces. They're not all the same. Just like New Yorkers. New Yorkers are not all dicks. We're not all like that. A lot of us are, but, you know, there's some nice people here in New York. The new NXT champion, Samoa Joe, was backstage cutting a promo when Ty Dillinger challenged him to a match. And when Joe said that he wasn't worthy of his time, Dillinger slapped him right in the face. So his execution awaited him in the main event. Eric Young beat No Way Jose with the wheelbarrow neckbreaker after the various members of Sanity interfered for the assist. Nikki Cross was going nuts trying to get at Joe. Jose, I mean. Well, you take the S away, it becomes Joe, you know. She was going out trying to get it at Joe. They all left. Sanity was going to leave. And she broke free. She ran back to the ring, climbed up to the top rope, and gave Jose a missile dropkick. And I think Asuka and Nikki Cross could be an intriguing match for the women's title. That's a match I'd like to see. We haven't seen enough Nikki wrestling, but I know she's pretty good. And I don't know, she would certainly be a unique opponent for Asuka. She'd be a handful. Asuka cut a promo saying that she has no competition left. And I'm listening to this and I'm thinking, all right, you know, maybe they'll go to Ember Moon next and, you know, build her up as the next babyface champion. And I don't know if they're doing that or not. They may bring in someone else. They brought in Mickie James. Maybe they'll bring in another name from the past. But I'm just watching this and I'm thinking, you know, man, if Asuka was already up on the main roster and dominating like this and just unbeaten, saying I have no competition, I would say, you know, as we're heading into WrestleMania season now, if I didn't know any better, I would say that they would be setting up for Ronda Rousey or someone like that to come in and challenge her at WrestleMania. Not for the championship necessarily, but just in like a big marquee match. But, you know, with her being in NXT, that would be a complete waste. Samoa Joe came out for the main event, non-title against Ty Dillinger. He got a babyface level reaction. You gotta go back and watch Joe's entrance. If you didn't see the show, just watch his march to the ring. And if you did see the show, go back and watch this part again. Because Joe walks out, the way he marched to the ring, with that pissed off scowl on his face, the championship over his shoulder, not behind him, the way Roman Reigns carries it. This was just money. This was awesome. Just him walking to the ring. That's all it... He just walked to the ring and he looked like the biggest badass in the world. I mean, he plays that part better than anybody in that company except maybe Brock Lesnar. There's no one else better than Joe. This is a longer match than I thought it would be. A lot more competitive than it should have been given that Dillinger slapped Joe right in the face earlier. This guy should have been carried out in a body bag for that. Joe put him in the choke, put him to sleep for the submission, going into his championship rematch with Nakamura in Japan, which, as I mentioned earlier, will air on the NXT show coming up this Wednesday. TNA. We have some TNA news, been kind of quiet for the last couple weeks. Late Monday, Anthem Sports put out a press release announcing a resolution of Billy Corgan's lawsuit against Impact Ventures, and as such, Corgan has dismissed his lawsuit against TNA. Corgan released a statement saying, "I am pleased that an agreement is now in place that allows wrestling operations to continue, for my interest in the start was always to provide support, be it material or creative, to such a great roster and crew, and as I plan on continuing in the business side of pro wrestling, I look forward to seeing whether Anthem's Anthem's leadership takes the company in 2017, and I wish them the best." So, whatever agreement they reached, I guess there was not a no-compete. That's what that sounds like to me. If Corgan wants to get back in the wrestling game in some way or start his own company or something, he is free to do so. It's also important to note that even though his lawsuit against the company, his lawsuit against TNA and Anthem, has been dismissed, Corgan's suit against Dixie Carter, and I would imagine also maybe that Dean Broadhead guy and some of the people that he feels wronged him, that is still moving forward. So this is not over yet as far as that. I hope he nails her. I hope he nails Dixie, not in that way, but I hope he nails her legally and can get some recourse because, you know, she dragged him through the mud and she took advantage of him and his, I guess, naivete. You could say that that's partly his fault, and it is, but I would love to see him get some kind of legal win over her in court. That would give me some satisfaction. There was a TNA tie-in to Ring of Honors. This kind of dovetails nicely into Final Battle, their big show Friday night. They were back at the Manhattan Center in New York City for the first time in a long time. They had been running that Terminal 5 venue on the west side. It's like a dance venue. Not very good for pro wrestling, but it was an issue where they got priced out, I guess, of the Manhattan Center, and so now they've worked out a deal. They are back at the Manhattan Center going forward, which is a much nicer, much better, much more accessible venue. It's literally right, like a block away, right in the shadow of Madison Square Garden. It's a great place for a wrestling show. And I was not at the show because I had other plans I could not break, but apparently I missed a hell of a pay-per-view. Kyle O'Reilly beat Adam Cole to win the Ring of Honor Championship in the main event, which is interesting, given that Cole's contract, I believe, the scuttlebutt, there's a word for you, is that his contract is up in either March or April. And I don't know that he has re-signed yet. I mean, Ring of Honor is trying to re-sign a whole bunch of different people, and they And they have, in some cases. I'll talk about that here in a second, but I don't know that that is the case with Adam Cole. And WWE, it's no secret, has been interested for a while now in signing this guy, as they should be, because he's really good, and I think just looking at him when he does interviews, he'd be a great spokesman for the company. But WWE is interested in signing a bunch of ROH guys. They already grabbed Steve Corino, who called what I would assume is probably his final ROH show here. His contract is up in a few weeks. The Young Bucks have also been on Triple H's radar for a while. They have been very elusive to WWE. They've wanted to lock those guys down, but it looks like Sinclair, made them an offer that they could not refuse. And the rumor is that the Bucks have signed a new contract to remain, a new two-year deal, to remain in Ring of Honor and New Japan. It would let them continue working New Japan dates and PWG. They have a great fondness for PWG. They've always wrestled there, and they will be able to continue to do so. In addition, they get to maintain control over their own merchandise. They do very well with their merch. And so, hey, why ruin a good thing, right? WWE isn't the end-all be-all. If they're happy having their freedom and the money is good, and apparently they're getting a nice bump in pay to go along with all that other stuff, then why go to WWE? But with Adam Cole, I wonder if they had him drop the championship here because he has not re-signed and they think he may be WWE bound. I mean, when I read that he lost the title, that was the first thought that came into my mind. I didn't think Kyle O'Reilly was winning the championship. Now, I have been following, you know, just broadly what's been going on with Ring of Honor. I know I don't talk about it much lately here on the podcast, but, you know, generally I always kind of know what's going on, and I didn't expect the title change, and they did it, and that was the first thing I thought. I said, I wonder if they think Cole has one foot out the door. We'll see how that plays out. The Bucks beat the Briscoes on this show, and after the match, Broken Matt Hardy made a surprise appearance by way of a pre-recorded video that TNA allowed Ring of Honor to use, where he challenged the Bucks of Youth to a match against himself and Brother Nero. He said they would render those ramshackle rednecks and spot monkeys obsolete. The pop this got from the live crowd was insane. I saw a video of this whole thing. And Matt, if you want to see just the promo, Matt put the promo up on his own YouTube channel. I also laughed when in there, he mentioned coming to the honorable ring. I just thought that was funny. This guy's not even in WWE, and if he doesn't win a Slammy this year, it'll be a crime. That's how good Matt Hardy has been. So, one of Anthem's first moves with TNA under its control is to allow for Ring of Honor to use that video, and it looks like allow for an interpromotional match down the road at some point. That's what I got out of this. I mean, how do you do this and not have it lead to a match? I think Dave Meltzer reported WrestleMania weekend as the possible date for it down in Florida. I think that's pretty cool. I think that's pretty cool that they would let that happen. One wonders, you know, what TNA may have asked for in return, if anything. I know they've got that Total Nonstop Deletion episode coming up from the Hardy Compound in a few weeks that they taped already. I don't think it's that. I don't know that, but, you know, they taped stuff from Matt's home. So, I mean, who the hell knows who he managed to sneak in there for that show? You know, that's one thing that you don't need to worry about when you do that, when you tape from someone's house. You don't have to worry about spoilers leaking. I mean, I guess technically they still could, but you're not taping in front of an audience like a crowd of people. So if you want to keep some secrets, they can do that. But I do not expect the Bucks to be on that show. Lucha Underground. I got more feedback from you guys this week. Very interested in my thoughts on this week's episode, more than usual. And you may be surprised. Lucha Underground this week was basically a one-match show. It was a gauntlet match, technically four matches in one, with Pentagon Dark taking on each member of the Black Lotus Triad, plus Black Lotus herself at the end. I know there's a lot of people thinking I'm going to hate on this show because of all the intergender stuff, but surprise, I'm not. I actually thought this was a hell of a show. I thought it told a great story, and it helps that these ladies can work. These women can go. The few things that bothered me, and there were a few things that bothered me, I'm not even going to really spend too much time on that because it didn't take away from any of the matches. There were some spots where I was a little uncomfortable, But I thought that they handled this really well. And this was my first exposure, really, like, in-ring exposure to any of these three ladies. Not I mean, Black Lotus I've seen before, but the other three. One thing I will say that Lucha Underground does better than any other promotions are these one-match shows. They've done this a few times now. And it helps because they only have less than a one-hour show. When you factor out commercials, it's probably like 48 minutes. So they don't have a two-hour show, a three-hour show, a four-hour show. And so they can do this. They could do these one-match shows that focus on one match or one storyline and play it out over the course of an entire episode, whether it's Aztec Warfare, the all-night long match, which is basically their version of an Iron Man match. They did that one time between Prince Puma and Johnny Mundo. They've done this a few times now, and they do a great job. Plus, it was nice to finally see Pentagon really focused on again for a change. We haven't seen enough of Pentagon lately. So the fact that this was a very Pentagon-heavy show, to me, was a good thing. The Triad interfered in Aztec Warfare and helped get Pentagon eliminated. So this is... Now, that's after he broke Black Lotus's arm at Ultima Lucha Dos last season. So these are the stories that helped set this whole thing up. She and her tribe had vowed revenge on him. First match here of the gauntlet was Pentagon against Doku, who is Kairi Hojo from the Stardom promotion in Japan. Pentagon kicked her ass in this match. This was the match that got me a little uncomfortable at certain points. I mean, he was having his way with this woman. This was, I think, a little too much, but they wanted to establish his dominance early on. He was fresh. It was the first match of the gauntlet. And also because of what it was going to lead to later on. So Doku took the brunt of his abuse here in this gauntlet. She did get to bust out two awesome diving elbows from the top rope. But on the second one, Pentagon caught her arm, set her up for the arm snap. He broke her arm. This ended the match. I guess just the act of breaking the arm now constitutes a submission. Another arm collected by Pentagon Dark. We then had a backstage segment with Katrina and Jeremiah Crane. Poor Jeremiah, just as soon as he gets to Lucha Underground, his girlfriend gets hurt. Ivelisse is out with a broken ankle. Based on this conversation that they had here, he and Katrina, they know each other from the past. She points out that he's wearing a stone of hers around his neck, which begs the question, is he also 500 years old like she is? I don't know if this implies they used to be lovers or what, but something's going on here. Next up, in the gauntlet, Pentagon took on Yure. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. Also from the Stardom promotion in Japan, this is Mayu Iwatani. She's at least more competitive in this match here against Pentagon. Pretty impressive. I mean, this is my first time seeing her, and I was impressed. In the end, though, Pentagon proves to be too much. He snaps her arm for his second win and second broken arm of the night. Dario Cueto confronts his brother Matanza outside of his cell. He says, next week you'll get your rematch for the Lucha Underground title against Johnny Mundo. Matanza says, no, I want Mysterio. Actually, he just said Mysterio in a lot more menacing voice than I just did. I sound like someone trying to impersonate someone who's actually tough. Rey Mysterio is, of course, the one who eliminated him in Aztec Warfare, so Matanza wants revenge. And then we see... both of Matanza's fists are bloodied up, and on the wall of his cell is a question mark etched in blood. Of course, the question mark being Mysterio's symbol. So Mysterio, I would not want to be Rey Mysterio. Up next, match number 3 for Pentagon, this time against Hito Kiddy, Io Shirai from the Stardom promotion. She proved to be one too many for Pentagon. Pretty much anything with vodka for me is one too many. She was one too many for Pentagon. All of these women were very impressive, but none to me more so than Hito Kiri. I watched some of her stuff on YouTube after this. This woman is nuts with some of the things that she does in the ring. She is the real deal. Took no more than a few minutes to turn this woman into the biggest female badass in any of the major promotions. I'll even throw Asuka in there. Although, I would kill to see a match between this woman and Asuka. That is a match I would pay to see. Pentagon went to town on this poor woman, though. After a while, he punted her right in the face. He wrapped a camera cable around her neck and choked her with it. He threw her into a sea of chairs after the fans had scattered, so she knocked all the chairs over in the first few... I mean, he launched her. I don't remember actually if it was her or Doku, but one of the women, he launched into these chairs, and they all fell down, and it was like, oh my god. And then came the highlight of the match. So Hitokiri begins to frantically run up the steps of the temple. And at first I thought maybe she had enough and she was running away for her life. But instead what she was doing was she walked over to the balcony just above where Dario's office is. The same balcony we've seen Angelico jump from many times. And she dove off the balcony with a crossbody onto Pentagon. It had to be a good 15 or 20 feet down below. And when I say she dove, I mean she dove. This wasn't one of those, let me just fall off. Let me get to the edge and just kind of a little rabbit jump off, little hop. She jumped and got as much height as she possibly could on the jump, as if she wasn't high enough. Let's get another 3 or 4 feet. And then she wiped out Pentagon down below. Thank God he caught her. Had she tried that with The Miz, I would be eulogizing this woman on this show right now. Back in the ring, Pentagon tried for a package pile driver. She turned it into a Canadian destroyer for the win. Or a striker called it a Far East destroyer. And look, I am not fully comfortable with the man versus women stuff in singles matches. I can tolerate it in tags and whatnot, and I think it works with certain women like Ivelisse. Ivelisse actually comes off as a badass, and therefore it makes it a little more believable. But credit where it's due, this was a hell of a match. I enjoyed this. They won me over here. This was a hell of a match. Black Lotus out next for her match to round out. Even though Pentagon got beat, the gauntlet continues. She comes out for her match. The fans want her to break his arm. And that's exactly what she does. She gets her revenge on Pentagon. She snaps the arm. First time we've seen Pentagon have his arm broken. Vampiro at the announce desk, who has his own history with Pentagon, has a very pleased look on his face. Dare I say, cracking a smile. Suddenly, Dragon Azteca Jr. returns. He too had his arm broken last season by Pentagon. He has a stare down with Black Lotus. If you remember, he and Black Lotus had a match at Ultima Lucha, so they've got their own issues. We didn't know what was going to happen here. Black Lotus and the tribe, they back off. They leave him alone. And Dragon Azteca goes ahead. Now, he's got his foot pressed on Pentagon's already broken arm. He grabs the other arm. And he breaks the good arm. So, 2 broken arms for Pentagon. 4 broken arms total on this show this week. They better get that fixed before Trump gets rid of Obamacare. I thought this was an excellent show overall. I thought this was an excellent show. As for the triad, I know WWE made offers to bring in at least 2 of the 3, either to the Performance Center, or it might have just been for that women's tournament. There's been a rumor for a while now they're going to do a women's tournament, kind of like the Cruiserweight Classic, on the network early next year at some point. It sounds like it's full speed ahead that they're going to do it. They were going to come in. Now it sounds like these women are not coming in. They changed their minds. They have elected to stay in Japan and, I guess, help build the Stardom promotion. It would have been probably a mortal blow for that company if they would have lost all of those women. So for Stardom, it's great if they're sticking around. It's a shame because I think it would have been cool to see them in whatever tournament WWE... And look, WWE brought in people that were not under contract to be in the tournament. Who's to say they can't still bring these women in as like a Kota Ibushi type thing where they come in, but they don't sign a full-time contract and they still work Japan. Maybe they could still get some of these women to come in. You know, but if not, them not coming to WWE, that would seem to open the door for them to be doing more Lucha Underground. I think this was originally intended just to be a one-off. I don't know this, I don't read all the spoilers, but I don't think they wrestled on any other shows. I think this was just a one-off for them. And so this opens the door maybe for them doing more. I know Angela Fong, who plays Black Lotus, she's pregnant now. So she won't be wrestling for a while, but that doesn't mean, you know, she can still appear on the show, and you can have the triad do the wrestling. I mean, you could still work around that. So, whether it's here or in WWE, I hope we do get to see more of them because it was a lot of fun watching these women do their thing. Some other quick notes. before we get to your questions, Jimmy Snuka was to be in court on Friday for a follow-up hearing to determine if he is mentally competent to stand trial in the murder of Nancy Argentino. The judge was told that his health took a turn and he could not travel, so he Skyped in to the hearing instead. His hospice doctor told the judge that Snuka's stomach cancer is terminal and he may die in the next 6 months. They claim he's had infection after infection and that he was hospitalized after suffering hysteria and delusions because of the infections. Snuka's wife claims that he tried to escape their home several times because he thought he was supposed to be at the WWE matches. And Snuka, when asked in court, claims that he doesn't even know who won the presidential election. He said, "I'm not really sure." There it is. There it is. Bingo. Remember what I said many months back on the podcast? I said, give it time. Soon you're going to hear about Snuka. They're going to find him in his gear. He's going to be out looking for Roddy Piper. And that when they talk to him, he's going to be all like, "Oh, brother. Brother, I don't know where I am, brother. Is Richard Nixon still president, brother?" Did I not call this? This is all very predictable. I even compared it at the time when I first talked about it to Vinny the Chin Gigante. He was the mob guy who used to roam around in his pajama bottoms because he thought the cops were looking to get him on something, or if he was indicted or whatever, he'd walk around and pretend to be out of his mind. He would pretend to be mentally ill. He was fine. He was competent. He knew what he was doing, but he would pretend. Now, do I know that Snuka is pretending? I don't know. Maybe he's not. But I said this would happen. So the DA says that Snuka is on morphine. His medical records, though, don't show that to be the case. And so there was no decision rendered. Instead, the judge has requested to see Snuka's treatment records for the last 6 months, at which point she will decide, I think it's a she, she will decide whether or not to dismiss the case. So this is all, I want to give credit here, this is all according to Sarah Cassie on Twitter, who covers the crime beat for LehighValleyLive.com. Lehigh Valley being the place in Pennsylvania where Snuka. Jimmy Snuka. Actually, you know what? That reminds me, back in the day on commentary, I was talking about great announcers earlier, and one of the best was Jesse Ventura. Jesse Ventura was great with whoever they put him with. Jim Ross in WCW, Gorilla Monsoon, Vince McMahon back on Saturday Night's Main Event. But one thing that Jesse used to do that used to make me laugh, he would always call Jimmy Snuka Jimmy Snuka. He had a very, like, particular way about pronouncing his name, and it always made me laugh. Snuka. It wasn't Snuka, it was Snuka. So yeah, now I call him Snooker. But anyway, his girlfriend slash mistress at the time, she was killed. It was in, I think, Lehigh Valley. So that's the significance of this woman covering the beat for the Lehigh Valley website. So this all goes back 33 years. You all know the story. I've talked about it ad nauseum. Snuka claims it was an accident, although his story has changed a whole bunch of times. I did cover the case at length here on the podcast last year, Sound Off 399, if you want to go back and listen to it. It does sound like the judge is suspicious of all of this, the fact that she didn't just outright dismiss the case and she wants to see the actual records. That's a good thing. I hope she looks into it. I have the same suspicions that I suspect the judge does. But I still think it's a long shot that he goes on trial, goes to jail, anything like that, because of how old and sick he is. You know, he does have the cancer. He is a very sick man. How sick, I think, is the question. Me personally, I don't believe that he doesn't know where he is and he's losing his mind and all of this stuff. Maybe he's driving himself nuts because he's probably, you know, he is sick and he's locked at home and he knows he can't go out and do these signings and be doing all the things that he was doing before. Maybe he's locked in his own little personal hell. And you know what? If that's the case, then good. Good. Let him stay there for a while. But unfortunately, it does look like this guy is going to take the truth to his grave. And that will be sooner rather than later. And some really good news for a change. If you remember back around the time all that nonsense was going down with me and Alex Riley, who just scored a role, by the way, on that upcoming Netflix show about Glow Wrestling, I promoted a GoFundMe that somebody had set up for a wrestler by the name of Joe Doering, who has wrestled in All Japan for a number of years, and he was diagnosed earlier this year with stage 3 brain cancer. That GoFundMe raised over $24,000 for him. Well, according to an item I saw in this week's Wrestling Observer, Joe has announced that he will be returning to the ring in January. And I take that to be a good sign that he's doing better. I haven't heard about him recently. I don't know if he's cancer-free. I take that to mean he might be. I don't know that, but at the very least, he seems to be doing much better, and he's going to try to make a comeback to the ring. So I was very happy to hear that. I wanted to share that with everybody. Let's get to the mailbag. If you have questions, you can email me, thesolemonster@gmail.com. I do read everything that you guys send me, even if you don't hear from me. Just bear with me. I've got an overload of emails. Please include your name and where you are from when you write in. I want to follow up here on the mailbag question from last week. Somebody asked about, what do you think about a Bobby Roode, Austin Aries revival faction? I love the idea. And I said, well, all we have to do now is come up with a name for him. And I want to just run through just about 4 or 5 suggestions. Some of the better, more interesting, shall we say, suggestions that people submitted. Some were emailed. Some of these I grabbed from YouTube, from the clip that Trax put up. One suggestion, I actually got this a few times, was the Glorious Heels. I guess it's kind of a play off the Dirty Heels name that Roode and Aries had in TNA. I can't see WWE wanting to use a word like that for a stable name, so I doubt very seriously that that's going to happen. The Fantastic Four. That was another one. Though I would guess Marvel might have something to say about that. The Glory Hole. Hole with a W. Not that other type of glory hole. Apocalypse. A couple people said Apocalypse. I guess a play off of the Horsemen being a sign of the Apocalypse. You're not going to call these guys the Horsemen because that would be stupid. But call them Apocalypse. Yeah, I could see that. I could see that. But then we had maybe the best one that I saw, which I want to give credit to Math Fresh on YouTube for this one. The Glorious Revival. Or even you could just cut that even shorter and make it just Glorious Revival. I don't know why I didn't think of that. I think that would be great. I think that's a good name. Now we just got to get the 4 of them together. Damone from Dallas, a question concerning 205 Live and the Cruiserweights. It isn't exactly a secret that the majority of main roster viewers don't watch anything on the network. With that being said, what is your opinion of the Cruiserweight title changing hands on a show that many viewers are not going to see? It had to. You want to make a big splash in your very first show, you change the title. It's very simple. You know, there's no harm in getting it off Brian Kendrick, right? Now they can go on TV tomorrow, and they can tell people, hey, all you non-subscribers out there, look what you missed. I thought it made total sense. And I would have done the same thing. And I think Rich Swann is the right guy to have that title on right now. The people like him. Nick from Boston. There's no doubting that NXT has been a huge success over the last few years. They've done a great job of making the shows and feuds actually seem like they matter. Of course, Triple H is the guy running the show, but I wonder how much credit should he actually get? When I think of the most over guys from NXT, I think of guys like Nakamura, Balor, Owens, Samoa Joe, and Sami Zayn, all of whom had pretty big followings prior to coming to NXT. Maybe I'm wrong, but I feel like Triple H may get a little too much credit, when in reality he basically has endless money at his disposal to sign the top talent from around the world, and since no one really has a gimmick anymore, they just go out there and do what made them famous to begin with. What do you think? Well, first of all, I doubt very seriously that he has endless money at his disposal. That's number one. Number two, you mentioned how much of a success NXT has been, and in a lot of ways it has been, and it still has that buzz around it, but it's still a money loser for the company. They still haven't made money, like profit, off of NXT by all accounts. So the thing is, though, you have to invest in your future. You have to look at the bigger picture. And so I'm happy that they're spending money on NXT the way they are. You know, I don't want them to cut costs. And, you know, even if they aren't really turning a profit, long term, I think it's in their best interest to be doing exactly what they're doing. Now, as far as Triple H deserving credit, he deserves credit for giving guys a chance who otherwise never would have been even considered for a WWE contract, okay? Most, if not all, of the guys that you just mentioned, if they're not already up on the main roster, I think Joe and Nakamura might be the only two you mentioned who are not. They will, and they will be eventually. Okay. In the case of a Zayn or an Owens, that never would have happened were it not for Triple H, especially Kevin Owens. And Owens said as much. He was on Chris Jericho's podcast many months ago after he won the Universal title. It might have been the week after he won the championship. He went on Talk as Jericho. He was talking about, you know, people thought that it was a last-minute decision. They thought that Triple H told me the finish when he was out there. And he was kind of laughing because it's completely preposterous. Of course, they knew exactly what was going to happen before they even walked out there. But he said he thanked Triple H in the ring that night after he won the championship. Not in character for, like, helping him win the match. He thanked him for taking a chance on him when very few others in that company probably would have. He even joked, like, the first time he met with Terry Taylor at the Performance Center, Terry flat out said to him, I would not have signed you. I don't see what he sees in you. So I give Triple H a lot of credit for bringing these guys in. Some of the more established names, because these guys are the ones who are going to carry the company when John Cena and Randy Orton and Chris Jericho and guys like that are not around. And we're already seeing it. Cena's being phased down a lot. Jericho comes in for... I mean, Jericho's been in for a while now. This is probably his longest straight stint in many years. But, you know, at some point he's going to disappear again and go back with his band and tour. And, you know, these are not full-time guys that you can kind of put everything on. You can't just rely on these guys. It's these other full-time guys who can work, who can talk, who can go. Those are the guys. You can call them whatever you want to. You want to call them indie, you know, vanilla midget. Call them whatever you want, however you feel about them, whether you like it or not. These are the guys that are going to carry the company going forward. You don't have to like it, but that's just how it is. And so I give him a lot of credit for having enough foresight to see that and bring these guys in and to, you know, build around them and give them a chance. And we need those guys. Now, when you look at their track record of turning out big new stars from the Performance Center, that's a different issue. Their track record is not great. But they have made some guys. I think you have to give them credit. They have made some guys, and there's a lot of potential in guys now that are popular. Maybe they're at like a mid-card level, but there is potential with some of these guys to be big, big stars down the road. You know, the thing is, though, NXT has, and I think this is kind of the point that you were getting at, NXT has revolved around Joe and Nakamura for months now. Before that, it was Balor, who is another guy who already had a big name coming in. Going forward, it looks like it's probably going to be Nakamura and Bobby Roode or Joe and Bobby Roode. And Roode's another one who has been wrestling, what, almost 15, 20 years probably? They had Baron Corbin down in NXT. They never tried to build around him in the NXT title picture. He was never in a title program for an extended period. He might have had a title match, but he was never in a title program before he got called up. Apollo Crews had a name on the indies, but he wasn't the same level star that Samoa Joe was or Sami Zayn was. They could have taken him and made him one of their own and built NXT around him, and they didn't. They called him up. They called up The Ascension, who have gone nowhere. They called up Bo Dallas, who's gone nowhere. Tyler Breeze worked his way up to main events in NXT, and he was really good, but he's gone nowhere since being called up. He's part of the Village People now. But they have had a number of main roster success stories. You know, Roman Reigns, I guess, being the biggest. Now, I'm not going to count Seth Rollins. I'm not going to count Dean Ambrose because both of those guys already had names on the indie scene before they came to WWE. With Roman was technically part of NXT, but you could argue that he doesn't even count because Roman goes back to the FCW era when he was, what was his name? Leaki, I think was his name. I don't know that I look at Roman Reigns as an NXT guy. I look at him more as an FCW guy. That was before Triple H took over developmental. You know, Bray Wyatt. Bray Wyatt is another one. Now, Bray Wyatt, he was around for a while before he finally found something with the Wyatt gimmick. But he also spent a lot of time in FCW before he finally, you know, caught fire. Before FCW morphed into NXT. So the question is, do you count him? Do you count Bray Wyatt or not? Is he an NXT success story? I think that's stretching it a little bit, but you can make that argument. You could probably say so. I would guess, I don't have it in front of me, I don't know, but I would guess Wyatt, he had to spend at least a year probably in NXT doing that gimmick before the Wyatts got called up. I think that's a good amount of time. So yeah, you could say Bray Wyatt is an NXT success story. I guess some people might debate that given the way he's been used on the main roster, but Bray, he is a big star. And I do think the potential is there for him to eventually be a really big breakout babyface and even be a world champion for one of the brands. Despite the very confusing, mind-numbing way that he's been booked over the years, people email me questions for the mailbag. Sometimes they can, Bray Wyatt be salvaged? Can he be saved? And I always say, yes, he can be. Because in a lot of ways, he reminds me, he's like a modern-day Undertaker, where he doesn't need the championship. He'll go through these feuds where, you know, you kind of scratch your head, or maybe the matches aren't even that good. Undertaker was a lot more protected than Bray Wyatt is. That's the biggest difference. But he's the closest thing to an Undertaker that we have modern day on the roster. And I do think that he could go through a bad feud. He could lose a whole bunch of matches. We could rant and rave and talk about why, you know, why are they doing this? It doesn't make any sense. But in the end, I think he can be rehabbed. He can always be rehabbed, and he can come back strong. And he can still be a big star. You know, it's not a matter of, oh, can he be saved? Of course he can be saved. He can still be their top guy on SmackDown. So he maybe has the, you know, the most potential of anyone. You know, Big E is another one that I think of. I don't think Big E did indies at all before he came in. I think they signed him as a power lifter. And he's been pretty successful. Now, I still think Big E can be something as a single. I know he's doing all the goofy bullshit now at New Day, but as a single, I still think that there's something there. Because he's very impressive. I mean, he's not tall, but he's big, and he's explosive, and he's strong, and he'll break his shoulder at some point if he keeps doing those dives. It's inevitable, but I would put Big E in the success category. Rusev? Rusev is another one. There's a guy, when I first saw him, I remember exactly when he debuted. When he debuted, he didn't have Lana as his man. I'm trying to think, who the hell was his manager when he first debuted? Oh my god, Rusev, oh, okay, it was Sylvester Laforte. When he first debuted, it was Alexander Rusev. He came out with that wooden board. He would have like his opponent's name on it. He would break the board. And I think it was like Laforte for at least a week or two who managed him. And then Lana came in. And they became, they became a package deal, and it worked out a lot better that way. But when he came in, Alexander Rusev, he looked like freaking Zangief or something out of Street Fighter. It was like, eh, okay. You know, I wasn't, there was nothing about the guy that was impressive aside from the fact that he was like built. Like this, he was like this thick wall of a guy. He was a big guy. But aside from that, I looked at him and I was like, eh, okay, whatever. You know, he's big, so what? And the more I saw of him, and even after he got called up to the main roster, he has improved just light years to the point where he's probably one of the best guys they have on the roster. And one of the more dependable guys, one of the more entertaining guys when it comes to these promos and these skits and stuff that they do with him. So for me, I would take Rusev and put him in the success category. I think Rusev is great. Then you have Cass and Enzo. Cass and Enzo were probably the only other ones I could think of. They were stars from day one on that main roster. Did not take very long at all for the crowd to get into the chants, to get into Enzo, and in a very short period of time, they have become big stars. Now, with the women, they did a great job with Charlotte, with Sasha. Now, I know Sasha wrestled indies, but still, it wasn't like Sasha was this big name. Charlotte and Sasha, so those are two as far as the women right there that I think, you know, they could chalk up in the success column. Nia Jax, I wouldn't put her in the success column just yet. Still very inexperienced, probably should not have been called up as quickly as she was. Dana Brooke is terrible. I would definitely not use her as an example of a success story yet. She is someone who absolutely could have benefited from staying down in NXT for another couple of years. At least another couple of years. I mean, for Christ's sake, Sami Zayn spent over 3 years, I think it was, in NXT. When he didn't need more than 6 months. Surely Dana Brooke could have spent another couple of years down there learning and fine-tuning things. But back to the men. There was one more team I forgot to mention. Chad Gable and Jason Jordan. I think those two, probably like long-term as singles, to be honest, have great potential to be top stars if they play their cards right. And I hope they do. I hope they don't just ruin what they have with those guys. And they can, you know, build their momentum as a team on SmackDown. And eventually, again, they're going to become single stars. And I hope that the fact that Gable is a smaller guy doesn't hinder him. Because I still say I see so much of Kurt Angle in him, it's not even funny. And I don't just mean in the ring. In the ring, he is one of the most fun guys to watch. If you've never seen, like, a Chad Gable match. But even when he's doing a promo and he's being sarcastic and stuff, he reminds me so much of Kurt Angle. And I think there's great, if he could be half of what Kurt Angle was, he'll be a top star. He'll be somebody they can rely on for years to come. And Jason Jordan, who's even bigger and, you know, has a better body, has a better look. Jordan has improved light years from where he was. Jordan also can be a big star. I could see one day at a WrestleMania, whether it's 3, 4, 5 years down the road, main event maybe, but a big singles match at a WrestleMania even between a Chad Gable and a Jason Jordan. Like, they could get there at some point, but they've got to play their cards right. The Revival. The Revival is also great. So there's two more teams that I just named right there in terms of the men that I would chalk up to, so far, still early, but success stories. Now, the Revival hasn't even been called up yet. But just in terms of their stint in NXT from where they were, it's like a Rusev thing. When I first saw Scott Dawson, he was like the Mechanics. Remember that? The Mechanics. And also, I think Sylvester Lefort was their manager. Sylvester Lefort, yeah. I mean, when these guys weren't necessarily so great, you know, they paired him off with him. They got rid of him and they got better. But I've done a complete 180 on those guys. To me, before, they were bland and boring. And now, I mean, they're like a modern-day Arn Anderson and Tully Blanchard out there. I mean, those two guys and Alpha, I mean, they could carry tag team wrestling in this company. You throw DIY in there, if they don't break them up so fast, there you go. Back in the day, it was Edge and Christian and the Hardys and the Dudleys, and now it could be DIY and the Revival and American Alpha. In fact, somebody emailed me about that same thing, and I agree. That could be your core right there for years to come. So I think when you look at the whole thing, the verdict is not bad. They haven't churned out very many top guys fresh out of the Performance Center. In fact, I don't know that they've turned out any yet, but they have made some stars. Of course, there's a difference between being a star and being somebody who actually moves the needle for the company and that makes the company a bunch of money. You know, James Ellsworth now would be considered a star. He's been on TV so much. But is he a difference maker? Absolutely not. That's what they need. That's what they should be looking for. Maybe eventually it could be somebody like Corbin or Big Cass. Time will tell. James from Detroit. I think Bayley is the female equivalent to Hulk Hogan in how crazy the fans are for her. I was wondering if there is a way they could set up a Hulk Hogan versus Andre the Giant type of feud between Bayley and Nia Jax. They already did in NXT, and it wasn't even that long ago. I mean, they could do it, but I would much rather see Bayley challenging Sasha for the title at Mania. Adam from Bristol, England. Here's my thoughts on the 2017 Hall of Fame. I think China will get the posthumous induction. Hopefully Vader will go in, Dudley's or Demolition as the group induction, and maybe Goldberg is the main event, although they may hold that back for a year. I'm not really sure on the celebrity induction, and I don't care, to be honest. What do you think? I like your top two. As I said a few weeks ago, there's no reason at all not to put Vader in the Hall of Fame this year. He should be a no-brainer. He should have been a no-brainer before, but now more than ever. I would love to see Demolition. I have pitched for them before, but they're still part of that lawsuit that's ongoing, so I don't see it. The Dudleys are fine. I think the Dudleys would make sense. They deserve to go in. Had Goldberg not signed on for more matches, I think it's all but a guarantee he'd be going in this year, probably as the lead attraction. There were always people who wondered, you know, would they take a WCW guy and headline a Hall of Fame class with them? And they put all that to rest, was it last year, the year before? I think it was this year. Was it this year? I think it was this year when they put Sting in the Hall of Fame and Sting headlined. So had he not signed on to do more matches, I don't have any doubt that Goldberg would have been the main attraction at the Hall of Fame next year. But I do think they hold him off for at least another year now that he's going to be wrestling. I saw some rumor, I don't know where it started, about them wanting to do an NWO group induction this year, which would be interesting given Hogan's status with the company and the rumors of him being back in the fold. And that would be the second induction for all three of those guys, if they do put them in the Hall of Fame as a group. I'm not really a fan of these group inductions and inducting people 2, 3, 4 times. WrestleMania is in Florida next year. And that is, of course, The Rock's home state. I think that would be as good a place as any to put him in, finally. I mean, obviously he's going in. It's just a matter of when. Them being in Florida, I think next year, I mean, The Rock would be the headline attraction for the Hall of Fame. And look, even if The Rock wrestles on that show, or he wrestles again, there's no rule that says you can't wrestle after being inducted into the Hall of Fame. Hogan did it. Lawler did it. Bret Hart did it, for crying out loud. You know? Snuka, or as Ventura would say, Snuka, is another one he also wrestled after. I would love, here's a few other names for you, though. I was thinking about this. I would love to see, and I've said him before, and I'll keep mentioning him because I feel like he gets no love, but I think Rick Martel should get a nod for the Hall of Fame. You don't really hear a lot about him. He left wrestling behind. He's off. I don't know if he's retired now, or I thought he was working, real estate, or he was doing something else, but, you know, he seems to be doing well for himself. He seems to have held up pretty well, and Martel had a fair amount of success in wrestling. He was always a good wrestler. He was AWA champion, tag team champion in WWE. Had a gimmick that people remember from, you know, the early 90s. So I think he'd be a good candidate to go in the Hall of Fame. And if they need a celebrity, again, they're in Orlando next year. So you have the Orlando tie-in. You have the rumors of a match with the Big Show. Who better than Shaq? I could see them putting Shaquille O'Neal in the Hall of Fame. Now, he may be there, again, to wrestle Big Show at WrestleMania, but you could still put him in the Hall of Fame. I mean, the thing is, I haven't heard anything about that match in the last few months. They were teasing that, like, nonstop many months ago. I haven't heard anything about it, so I don't know if it was just kind of forgotten about. I don't know if they're going to come back to it, if it's actually going to happen, because there's been rumors of this match for years, and it never happens. So it's far from a guarantee that those two are going to be wrestling, but whether he does or doesn't, I think Shaq would absolutely make sense. He's a big wrestling fan. He's made a few guest appearances on Raw. He made appearances with Hulk Hogan in WCW and in TNA. I think Shaq would make sense. And if not Shaq, I was thinking of other celebrities. You know, obviously Cyndi Lauper has yet to go in. If there's any celebrity who has yet to go in who deserves to be in there, it's Cyndi Lauper. Because you take her or Mr. T. More so Mr. T. But either one of them, they played such a big role in that first WrestleMania, and even the build-up, like the special they did on MTV, and the stuff that with her and Captain Lou and Piper, I mean, that was very big for the company at the time. That was very influential stuff. I don't think she gets enough credit for playing as important a role as she did in the rise of WWE back in, 84, 85. Mr. T's already in. She should be in. I don't know if it's a case of her not wanting to go in. I don't see why she wouldn't. I don't think she's on bad terms. She made a guest appearance on Raw just a few years ago. So she's another one. But there was another name I was thinking of. And it's a name I have heard nobody mention. But looking at some of the celebrities they've already put in, I look at this and I say, why not him? Why not Mark Cuban? Guy's got a hit TV show right now, which happens to be my favorite show on TV right now. I know Raw is not my favorite show. Funny thing is, Raw is not even in my top five. Shark Tank is by far my favorite show on TV at the moment. He's a big part of that show. And look, that's all it took to get Drew Carey in the Hall of Fame. The only reason they put Drew Carey in the Hall of Fame, it wasn't even so much he made that one appearance in the Rumble and Kane picked him up for a chokeslam. He had a TV show. I don't know if it was The Price is Right or something else, but he was there to plug a TV show. That was part of the whole deal. He had a new show to promote. He made one appearance for them, which was that Royal Rumble appearance, and he got in. Cuban has made a couple of memorable appearances, and he did more than Carey ever did because Cuban both times took bumps. Cuban took an RKO from Randy Orton once at Survivor Series, and then he got put through a table on Raw once by Sheamus. And he's a guy who's been in the news lately. He's got a name. It would get them some publicity. From a WWE point of view, Mark Cuban would absolutely make sense as a celebrity inductee for the Hall of Fame. Eric from Arizona, I heard a Shoot interview with Bruce Pritchard saying that Batista replaced Mark Jindrak in Evolution. Bruce said that Jindrak was the original choice for him to be in Evolution with Triple H, Ric Flair, and Randy Orton. Do you know why they changed their mind? Do you believe they made the right decision? Yeah, I mean, Triple H admitted it on his last DVD that Jindrak was originally planned for that Batista spot. I don't know why the change was made. Jindrak on his Twitter a few years ago said that he wasn't ready for the spot. He seemed to be at peace with it. He said it made me a better person. I matured a lot more after that. The way he was talking about it, it almost sounded like maybe it was a disciplinary thing, and that was the reason why. Like, he did something stupid that lost him the spot, and he kind of understood why, and he accepted it and all that. And he's done very well for himself. I mean, maybe he's not as big a star as he would have been had he stayed with WWE, but he went down to Mexico, Marco Corleone. He became a big star. He got his own soap opera down there, so I think he's doing well for himself. Do I think they made the right decision? Of course. Of course they made the right decision. Batista turned into a huge success. How can you say they made the wrong choice? I mean, right from the outset, once they did that first match with him and Triple H at WrestleMania, I mean, that show with that main event did over 1 million buys on pay-per-view. I mean, Batista was a draw. Batista was hot. He had a unique look. That's part of it also, you know. I think of Jindrak back then and Randy Orton. I don't know, Jindrak and Orton, they kind of cancel each other out for me. They look too similar. Batista looked completely different. You had this monstrous, very kind of weird-looking, jacked-up dude, and then Randy Orton. Two totally different personalities, totally different looks and body types. And Batista just had something about him that set him apart from everybody else, including Jindrak. So, yeah, I think it's pretty safe to say that they made the right call on that. Jeffrey from Toronto, do you think Vince Russo and Jim Cornette should be inducted into the WWE Hall of Fame? Yes, but only if they agree to induct each other. Those speeches would be something else. That's got to be the provision. We'll put you both in, but you got to do the speech for each other. Dave from Yorkshire, England, a lot has been made of The Undertaker taping his fists and making sure Shawn Michaels did the job for Steve Austin at WrestleMania 14. Michaels denies that this ever happened. Do you A, believe the story, and B, who would your money have been on? Well, I mean, it depends. You say Shawn denied the story. Does he deny that Undertaker was taping his fists, or does he deny that Undertaker ever said anything to him? I don't know if Undertaker actually did tape up his fists, but I do absolutely 100% believe that he made it clear to Shawn that he needed to do what was asked of him. I mean, Undertaker even teased at him. He was on that interview with Michael Landsberg way back in 02. One of the very few kind of like out of character interviews The Undertaker has ever done. And he talked about this. He admitted it. He said it would have been a long night for Shawn Michaels had he not gone ahead and did what he was supposed to do. I will take Undertaker's word over the word of Shawn Michaels. And my money, by the way, you're talking about who would my money be on in a real fight? My money would be on Undertaker. I think Shawn tried and did a decent job of playing tough guy on TV. But in a real fight back then, my money is on the real tough guy. And I think that would have been Undertaker. Steve from Bryant, Arkansas. Royal Rumble is one of my favorite pay-per-views of the year. My question is about the title match between Bret Hart and Razor Ramon in 1993. Was this the original plan, or was it supposed to be between Bret Hart and the Ultimate Warrior? Also, was Warrior ever supposed to win the championship again, whether it was in 92 or in 96? Well, if you listen to the Warrior, then yeah, he was supposed to get the belt back both times he came back to WWE. But that was always his story. Again, take that with a grain of salt. The title match at the Rumble in 93, I'm trying to go back here. This is like one of my favorite periods in WWE. So I know all about this whole time period and all the guys. The title match at the Rumble in 93, there was always a rumor that it was going to be Bret defending against the Warrior, with the Warrior putting Bret over. but I can't see it. And Brett's always said that too, and I cannot see it. I mentioned last week, I got a different mailbag question asking me, you know, which match that almost happened or could have happened would you have preferred to see? Brett and Hogan in 93 or Randy Savage and Shawn Michaels in 94 WrestleMania 10. Both of them, I think, would have been very interesting matches. I went with Brett and Hogan. Okay, so that I talked about this last week. I wanted to see that match at SummerSlam in 93. Once, you know, years later, I found out that there was a chance that that might happen. That's a match I would have liked to have seen. Brett beating the Warrior clean? I can't even fathom it. I can't even fathom that happening. Now, in Brett's book, I know he mentions hearing about Warrior, because Warrior and Bulldog got fired pretty much right around the same time. And it had to do with, like, importing HGH from overseas, and this was right around the time WWF, they had the government breathing down their neck. Vince had a very serious crackdown on steroids and drugs, and you saw a lot of guys shrink. Like, he was at his most serious back then, like the end of 92, early 93, because his company had just so much heat on it, and it was affecting business. And so around that time that Warrior and Bulldog got fired, Brett talked about in the book being sad because it ruined his dream of putting Warrior in the sharpshooter at WrestleMania 9 and making him submit, which actually would have been a pretty big endorsement for Brett had he done that. But that's even more laughable, that he would lose to the sharpshooter. But it's hard to tell if Brett was, if he actually thought there was a chance of that happening, or if he was just being funny. You know, if he was just being facetious when he wrote that. I don't know. My impression, and again, all of this is rumor. It's all going to, like, urban legend. I don't know that we'll ever know the answer for sure, unless Vince does a book, and I doubt he would talk about this. My impression is the Rumble match was, at one point, a legitimate idea that they had, or a legitimate idea that was told to Brett. But it went out the window once Warrior got fired. Now, there's always been another theory, and again, who knows if it's true, but you could argue that it may have been based on the fact that Bret Hart beat Ric Flair for the championship. Again, that was a move that was done at a house show, no less, because they had to get the belt onto somebody younger and smaller, and again, all the steroid stuff. That's why they did it. But he beat Ric Flair, pretty big name in the company, to win the championship. Bret, the following year, right, the idea was he would beat Hogan at SummerSlam, which Hogan wouldn't go for, but that was the plan that was discussed. And Hogan said, oh, I'll lose it to Yokozuna. So he beat Flair. They later on had plans, maybe, for him to beat Hogan, two of the biggest stars in the company. It stands to reason that maybe there was a plan where Brett would beat Warrior at the Royal Rumble, and then I think the rumor is that he would beat Randy Savage at WrestleMania. So that in the span of a year, to make Brett their new big star, their top, top guy, he would have beaten four of the top names in the company in the span of 1 year. Flair, Warrior, Savage, and Hogan. Now, I don't know that I'd buy that, but that's been another rumor that's been floated out there over the years. But even if Warrior had stayed, there's no way he was doing a job for Brett. I just don't see it. There's no way the Warrior was doing a job for Brett unless it was an empty arena match with all cameras barred from filming. And even then, he probably only would have lost to him by countout. Dan from Los Angeles, buy or sell on which you would rather see. Ty Dillinger debuting in the Royal Rumble is number 10, or Bobby Roode debuting on the Raw after WrestleMania. I'm going to buy on Roode debuting after May. I mean, him doing that entrance in that building on the post-Mania Raw? Are you kidding me? That'd be one of the highlights of the whole weekend. But I also get that, you know, look, it's either going to be Roode or Nakamura. You can't call them both up because NXT still needs somebody to hold that championship. So as much as I'd like to see it, that would mean Nakamura spends probably another 6 months or so down in NXT. And he really should not be spending another 6 months down there. So Bobby Roode would probably have to stay behind. But I mean, of the two, I would rather see Roode and sell on Dillinger. Sky from Charlotte, I consider Shawn Michaels to have the best comeback from injury story in wrestling history. I want to set up a one has to go scenario for you for what I consider to be his four best matches post back surgery. SummerSlam 2002 against Triple H, WrestleMania 21 against Kurt Angle, WrestleMania 24 against Ric Flair, and WrestleMania 25 against The Undertaker. Of these four matches, which one has to go? One has to go. I like that. That's an interesting idea. I know you're from Charlotte, so you may not like this answer, but the match with Flair is the weakest of the bunch, despite the story they did. It's a great story, but the match was the weakest of the bunch, and so of the four, that one has to go. That's just how it has to be. The match with Triple H when he came back in 02 was awesome. The match with Kurt Angle is one of the best matches in WrestleMania history, and that comes from no greater authority than Bobby Heenan, who actually made that comment at the time when he saw that match. He said that was the greatest match, I don't know, ever, but certainly at WrestleMania that he had ever seen, and it's hard to argue with that. WrestleMania 25, you guys know my thoughts on that. That might be my most favorite match. That was such an awesome match. It is my favorite match in terms of WrestleMania. Not necessarily overall, but at WrestleMania, that first match at 25 was, to me, just easily the best. So how can I omit that one? The Flair one, just by process of elimination, is the one that has to go. Andrew in Arkansas will end with this, a non-wrestling buy or sell, on the Mets, new contract with Yoenis Cespedes. I'm buying. I am buying on that. They signed this guy for 4 years, $110 million. And the rumors were that he was as good as gone. He wanted a 5 or 6 year deal. And I'm with them. I say to give someone a 5 year deal or more is ridiculous. They've been burned so many times by too many guys, too many stupid contracts before. I'm glad the Mets did not go longer than 4. And I'm glad that Cespedes came to his senses, because you know what? Even at 4 years, he got a pretty damn good deal. The guy is worth it for 4 years. Without him, they don't get as far as they have the last two seasons. Now, they still haven't won a title. The Cubs won a title, the Mets didn't. But without him, their chances of winning one would be a hell of a lot less than it is with him on the team. So I'm very happy he's staying put in New York. And we'll wrap things up with that. I think that's a lot of questions for this week. We'll answer more of them next week. You can email me, thesolemonster@gmail.com is the place to send all of your questions and business inquiries and all of those types of things. You can follow me on Twitter @Solemonster. I will be live tweeting during the TLC pay-per-view tonight, as well as Raw tomorrow night. So follow me on there. Be one of the 20,000 plus that I am so grateful to have following me on there. You can also subscribe to the YouTube channel. YouTube.com/TheSolemonster is the official account. I am planning on doing a TLC post-show later tonight. That is the plan. We'll see how that goes. And we will be back with a brand new podcast, as always, next Sunday. That'll be episode 473. So as we head, we're counting down here to the end of the year. I got to start thinking about my top 10 WWE matches for 2016. And I got to start giving that some thought. Got the Christmas episode in a few weeks. A lot of good stuff coming up. So until next time, be well. Stay safe. Don't forget to check out the new Real Vegan shirt in our store on Pro Wrestling Tees. And we'll see you back here for more Sound Off next week. And until then, take care, guys.